Yeah, I don't see anything in here as far as whether they should be able to make it or not, though.
No, but he did say he had his fire.
Yeah, but that would have been during the day.
Today.
It's 8 o'clock at night.
Yeah, but come on. Now let's think about this. This is Michael. He comes down, okay?
40 minutes to get down in the
40 minutes to get down there. Halfway down, the Jeep breaks down. Has to call his wife to bring the family truckster. Yeah. She picks him up, takes him all the way down to the training.
Yeah.
Okay? So then everything's okay, and she waits, and mm-hmm. then they get back in because they've got to go get the Jeep that's broken down halfway from home.
Mm-hmm.
On the way back up, they lose an alternator again,
mm-hmm.
or a belt, mm-hmm. because, you know, the new alternator, you know, stretched the old belt.
Stretched the, okay, okay.
Okay, yeah. So now the truck is running on battery only,
all right.
and they got just enough to push
the Jeep
back down to his favorite mechanics.
Right.
Okay.
Well, there won't be a parking spot.
There won't be a parking spot, but it's okay because there's a burnt out lot right next to it.
So you can just park it on the embers. Actually, you know, it's a god awful shame because it happens always at the worst time.
Oh, and by the way, this will be while driving in a whiteout condition from the blizzard that they're that in you, the middle you, of.
Exactly, on top of the already 290 inches of snow. You know, it's just going to be a small storm, 3 feet.
Yeah. Just a small, oh, look. You're only getting 3 feet tonight.
Exactly. And it's a balmy negative 12. It's the only place yes. where it can still maintain that kind of cold temperature and snow.
Yeah.
Anywhere else, it has to be at least 20 degrees.
Right. Meanwhile, the hordes of Canadians are coming across the border.
Our walking, Canadian brothers and sisters.
Walking across the lake.
Yes, well, exact. Or sledding.
Invading the borders.
Or sledding.
Or sledding.
Exactly. What are you going to invade with? Skidoo. Yeah. Polaris.
Yeah. Just bring us Molson, eh?
Hey, please do. Molson and some of that split pea, French Canadian split pea soup. God, I love that stuff.
Are those French fries? What the heck are those French fries? The ones with the gravy and everything?
Oh, Jesus.
And there's something else they put in that. Oh, man.
Magic pixie dust, because it's damn good.
Yeah, yeah.
Everything, it tastes better. But it's probably because they don't... You know what it is? It's because they cook... When they use their foods and make their beer, they don't use contaminated chemical-filled water like we use here.
Yeah, exactly. I was listening to the Scarborough dude on one of his things, and he was talking about having breakfast. And he said, yeah, they're having breakfast. And, oh, I almost emailed him because he said, yeah, and I had... sitting down, I had these nice eggs and what's it called? I forget. There's a name for this kind of bacon. It's real thick and it's square. And what do they call that? And
it's
I
wanted, square?
Rectangle. Kind of big. Yeah, rectangle, but fat.
Yeah.
You know? And I wanted to...
it's American streaky bacon.
Well, no, actually, I was going to write him and say... You know, I don't know what they call it up there, but down here, they call that Canadian bacon.
Wow. Well, Canadian bacon's round down here, though.
Well, I've seen it squares. You know, it's just the fact that it's fat
right.
as opposed to strips.
Okay, I got it. Yeah, yeah. yeah. But, actually, I stopped buying conventional American bacon ages ago. I go to the deli or to the butcher shop, and I get Polish slab bacon, which is what American bacon is. It's just... long slabs of the bacon, part of the pig, and it's, you know, inch and a half, inch and three quarters wide.
Yeah.
But, what you know, in height, let's just call it, and it's usually, you know, however, I always get it thick cut. The thickest piece of bacon I've ever had cut was a little over a quarter of an inch thick. That's a good piece of bacon.
Yeah.
Wow. Two strips of that on a BLT. Oh, my God, is that good. That's probably my favorite sandwich of all time. Yeah. And here we have, we just had a Chinese food dinner, and I'm talking about BLTs.
We might as well get this thing started, because we'll let people join when they can.
Should I dump out of this Google Plus, you think, or are we going to get feedback?
Well, so far we have.
I mean, I don't need a camera to see you. I can just look up.
Well, that's true, but if somebody else comes on.
True.
If somebody else comes on, then you're there.
But couldn't I join anyway at that point?
You could.
Well, let's try it. Let's see if it screws up. Yeah, hopefully it doesn't.
Right now, because all the audio is local, so...
Mm-hmm.
And, yeah, we'll just leave it like this.
We'll give it a whirl. Let me check the show notes.
Oh, yeah, please.
Yes.
Yeah, add some if you can, because... Yeah,
so, in other words, just make up shit?
Yeah, this is a make up shit show. Welcome to the make up shit show.
Let us see. You already addressed one of the subjects that came to mind. Snow, more snow and some snow. Snow plowing, mailbox. Snow plow, okay. More snow. There's some snow in our show notes with some more snow on it. I'm trying to think here. What has happened that I've noticed in the news or personally that's even remotely worth talking about?
I start the show while you were doing this because I'll probably end up... This will probably be part of the show anyway.
Probably.
A long pre-roll.
It happens. Sometimes you pre-roll, sometimes you don't. What you do need is tissue to clean up after.
Almost live from across the USA, this is Late Night Cure! Your hosts tonight are Joel and Barry, the virtual blooper. Tonight, snow, go away. Priai, suck in snow. And are you a sizes? All that and more on Late Night. And now, digitally gathering at the plush QRM studios in Southwest New Hampshire. Here's Joel and Barry.
Yes, we're drinking.
All right. Welcome, everybody, to Late Night QRM show number 129 from the southwest corner of New Hampshire in the beautiful plush QRM studios. I am Barry J.
And also from the southwest corner of New Hampshire in the beautiful and plush QRM studios here in Jaffrey, this is Joel. Did I sound good?
Yeah, that sounded good. I'm waiting for the other guys to join in. Oh, wait, there are no other guys. Where the hell are they?
AWOL.
Where's Barty? Where's Michael?
AWOL.
They're not here. Now, Michael has an excuse. I don't know what Barty's excuse is, except for it's drug taking time. But
well, maybe we're just lousy company.
That could be, too. Yeah.
It could be. Yeah. You know, I'm open-minded enough to say, oh...
Yeah, or he could be on one of his infamous business trips again.
And God knows he's been on a ton of those. He's been on,
a lot of those lately. But we miss you, Barty. Where the hell are you?
Yeah, man.
Okay. And we've got a short list of topics tonight because I literally threw them together this afternoon in about 10 minutes while I was taking a break from putting together the new mailbox configuration.
Yes, yes.
Which we'll get to soon.
I just thought of a show note, and it's pathetic.
Okay, we'll put it down. What?
It's really pathetic.
What's pathetic?
It's about blue jeans.
Yeah?
Yeah.
We'll put it down. Oh, God. You can type.
I know. I remember how... I can't spell.
Oh, that doesn't matter.
What's this button do?
Oh, no, not that button! Jeez, yes. So it's we have had now. Of course, Michael's not here, so we can exaggerate a bit because, well, anything we say about snow right here and complain about is so infinitesimal small compared to what Michael's going through.
God, I honestly don't know how the folks in that area deal with it as well as they do. Because it's just, it's too much.
Well, this year, too, I think it's even getting to be too much for them. I mean, they're used to dealing with a lot of snow. But literally, Michael posted on the Google Plus group, he posted a warning. And basically, they had another blizzard this week.
I can't imagine.
In Copper Harbor. And not only did they have a blizzard, but then they also announced several roads were closed. Period. Closed.
They only have several roads.
Yeah, I know. And they were closed because of drifting and snow. And they pulled the plows, and they said, the only way we're sending plows out is in an emergency.
Right.
So, it was so bad, they pulled the freaking plows off the road.
Now, and I can only speculate, but from a medic's perspective, that's got to be the ultimate of scary. Because,
yeah.
I mean, you know, your job, your vocation is to help those who are in need.
Yeah.
And if the roads are that impassable that they won't send a plow truck, short of saying, okay, you know, Mr. Smith is having a heart attack, we got to run a plow truck from here to there.
Yeah.
You have to get in behind it so you can get the ambulance, to get the rig to them.
Right.
That's scary stuff, man.
It is. It is. That's unbelievable amount of snow that they're getting there. And but it was, I was listening to a podcast that shall not be named this week, and apparently they did get above zero a couple days.
So they broke out the Hawaiian shirts and tiki torches.
They were wearing shorts and t-shirts, and some were out sunbathing because it made it to 23 degrees.
Ah, it's an absolute heat wave. The black flies must have been coming out.
Oh, man, I just couldn't believe it. Well, we got snow here, too.
Yes.
Several days. And one, you know, it's just going to be a minor thing, you know.
I love that one.
About 3 inches. And by the time they were done, it was up to 18 inches, I think.
Yeah, that's what I was snowblowing out of my driveway.
Yeah, and you got worse than we did. I mean, we got several inches up here. I would say we got probably at least a foot, maybe 14, 15 inches. Right. But you guys got slammed with the 18
inches. We got 18, 20 inches of snow, yeah. And it was... this last storm, let me know if I'm seeing something wrong here, but is it me or is the news weather predictions, especially snow accumulation, are they downplaying that an awful lot this season? Like in the beginning of the season, they would, oh my God, Snowmageddon, and we're going to get buried under 20 feet of snow. And then what would happen is we get 6 inches.
Yeah.
2 days prior to that 6 inches, which was supposed to be, you know, 3 feet, everybody went to the grocery store and bought bread, milk, and toilet paper.
Yeah.
Wiped the shelves out entirely for a lousy 6 inches of snow, which in some instances isn't even worth taking the time to snow blow.
Right.
And then I think it's like they slingshotted way far the other direction, and they started to underestimate and that's, underpredict. So this last storm, they said...
Last week was
We are in the... The 4 to 8 range.
I up out here, they said a dusting to maybe 2 inches.
Uh-huh.
And all of a sudden, it started snowing. And I was at work because this came in the afternoon.
Yep.
And I said, oh, well, dusting to 2 inches, that won't be anything, you know. So I'm staying at work. I go outside. It's like whiteout conditions.
Yep.
There's already 3 or 4 inches on the ground.
Yep.
And that was the storm where I had to creep home, and I have finally decided, as much as I love my Prius, it sucks in the snow.
I'm not laughing at. I'm laughing with you. Yeah,
with.
Not at.
And mostly. Now, granted, it's got low clearance, okay, and I don't have snow tires.
You can get 3 sheets of paper between the bottom of the car and the top of the street. That's about it. You tell you gauge the thickness, the Camaro clearance. Yeah.
But I made it. I was slow but sure, but I made it. I was fearing Temple Mountain, and I'm coming up to Temple Mountain. I said, "Oh my God, Temple Mountain!" And but then, lo and behold, there was a car in front of me, and in there was a snowplow in front of him. And I said, oh, thank God.
The gods are smiling on me.
I'm following a snowplow up Temple Mountain. Okay, it's going to be slow because snowplows go slow.
Yep, slow and steady.
But I'll be able to make it up and over and not worry about any kind of accumulation on the ground.
Yeah.
Well, when we start going up, and about halfway up the hill, right at the steepest part.
Right.
Okay. For some reason, the snowplow stopped.
Yeah, they poured another coffee out of his thermos.
Whatever. But I'm like, no, don't stop here. And then he continues on, and the car behind him skids a little bit, but continues on. Uh-huh. And this is where I had problems. And I don't know whether I've talked about this on the podcast before,
but
my Prius has this anti-skid
feature.
Yes. That in most modern day cars have this anti-skid feature now.
Mm-hmm.
But they have a button that you can turn it on and off.
Override.
In my year 2005 Prius, it didn't have an override. So imagine, and what happens with this is if your wheels start slipping, a little slipping icon, jagged lines, comes on and flashes on your thing, and the car stops the wheels from turning to prevent you from, you know, slipping a lot, right? And it does a pause.
A pregnant pause
where you're not moving, and then it lets the wheels try again. And if they start slipping, it pauses.
Oh, the hell with that.
A pregnant pause.
Okay? Oh, no.
So I'm at the steepest part of Temple Mountain, in the middle.
In the snow,
with a line of cars behind me. And I'm going up Temple Mountain. It makes a noise like this. You know, you can hear the tires go, dvoof. And then you can hear, you can see the little light flash, and you can hear the motor stop. It just goes silent, you know. So this is the way I'm going up Temple Mountain. Vroom, 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 vroom. So I'm going up at about 1 to 2 miles per hour.
There would be one other sound accompanied with that.
Yeah.
Vroom. In a different scenario, let's say if I were driving it, and that would be the sound of an insanely large, bald, pissed off man screaming at the top of his lungs about this anti-slip piece of shit.
I'm telling you, I'm just sitting there, and you know, like any car, because you think it's like a normal car, so you think pushing the gas pedal, which really isn't a gas pedal, you know,
it's an electric switch.
It's a control device, right? A variable control device,
right,
in a vehicle. But I've got it down to the floor, and just going up Temple Mountain.
Fucking go, you Japanese piece of shit! I need to go. You're trying to rock the car back and forth. And there's 7,000 cars on the queue behind you.
I will tell you that it did make it up the mountain.
Uh-huh.
It probably took me a half hour to get up the freaking mountain.
I'll be honest with you, sir. And in moments like that, that explains something. Because you educated me, and I want to thank you. Two storms ago, I have to go up a particular road. It's in a really, really steep road it's actually Clark Street.
Mm-hmm.
Now, that's the same street. And when you and I are talking, you usually lose me or I lose you just about the top three quarter. And someone up there's a ham because I can hear their ham when he or she hits that mic. All cell gone. But Clark Street, it was packed with snow. And there was somebody who was very environmentally conscious as well as budgetary conscious in their Prius. And there was, honest to God, 8 inches of snow on the ground. This Prius all but came to a friggin' stop. And it's on the hill. And I guess it must have been that and I'm like, bullshit on this. Now, I got studded snows on my Oldsmobile, front wheel drive.
Yeah.
I matted it. I passed four cars in the opposite lane in the snow. Right past them. And I looked in my rearview mirror, and that stupid little guy, that stupid little purple Prius is... And I thought, what a piece of shit that car is in the snow. Now I know why, and thank you. So the point is I need to avoid getting stuck behind a Prius.
Yes.
In the snow.
Well, the newer Priuses, I believe, have a switch. You can override it.
Now, plural for Prius, would that be Prii?
Prii, I think, yes. Prii, I'm not sure. Prii. Priuses sound stupid, so it must be Prii, yes.
The Prii.
And I'll tell you, actually, that has scared the hell out of me sometimes. When you're coming out of, if you're at a light, or worse yet, when I come out of work, I got to make a left-hand turn on a usually pretty busy four-lane road.
Yeah.
And so you're sitting there, and we've got they've got a white line painted across, like you find at traffic lights.
Right.
Okay. And if it's raining out, that paint, that painted part, is much slipperier
than the rest of the street.
Than the rest of the street. So you're sitting there like this, and sometimes at night you've gotta hit the gas and get out into the or you're gonna be sitting there for like 45 minutes trying to get out from work if you hit it at the right time. So there's been many a times where I'm there, there's an opening. So you time it just right, you hit it, and of course it's been raining, and you hit that white paint, and it goes, vroom, and all of a sudden your car's taking that pregnant pause. Meanwhile, there's cars coming both directions, and you're out in the middle of the lane by this time, and then all of a sudden it kicks in again, and vroom, you go.
But, that would scare the hell out of me.
Yeah. So I'm not a real fan of the anti-skid feature.
Right.
I wish I had the ability to be able to override it.
I could see where that would be a major, major, major perk. And like I said, there's got to be a fuse that you can pull for the anti-slip so it doesn't kick in.
But the thing is then is how's the car react?
It might drive completely fine because it doesn't sense the tire slipping, so it's just going to drive like normal. And that's 9 out of 10 times. That's what I'm researching for you right now.
Okay. Of course. Joel is doing the Google thing. By the way, I received a text from Michael.
Oh, excellent.
No, well, apparently he probably will not be joining us.
Oh, okay.
He says, "Hey, guys, I am taking care of a snowmobile accident at the moment. Day 3 of blizzard here. Nasty out." So everything we told you we thought was happening there is happening.
It's unfortunate, too.
Yes. And
sledding accidents, they never end well.
No.
You know,
no. But so that was that day in snow. And then we had another trace of snow that happened. And this time the roads were kind of okay, but by the time I got to Jaffrey, that trace was about 2 to 3 inches again. And of course, all the towns are getting to the end of their snow budgets.
Right.
And so there's not a lot of sand and salt left. They're trying to stretch and not let, you know, keep the drivers off of overtime and everything. The plow drivers. So all the main roads were okay, but I got into my neighborhood. My neighborhood's quite large, what I consider my neighborhood.
Right.
It's when I turn off the main street and I'm in the back roads.
Right.
Well, I guess they only plowed them once and they were letting it go. So they were pretty slushy.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a fun ride in the Prius trying to get back to my house. And I said, you know, I'm not even going to go in. I have a circular driveway. And one of the entrances I usually go in goes up a small hill.
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
And I said, I'm not even going to try that. I'm going to go in on the top side. And that's pretty level. And, of course, and this is where I found out the snowplow went through once because... Mm-hmm. There was the usual buildup at the end of the driveway, and I said, oh, man, so I'm hitting it as fast as I can because the road's still slushy, and I make the turn, and I get about halfway through that, and so I back out, and there's only one way to do it. You back out, you hit the same, try to hit the same two ruts going in, and you get a little bit further until you hear Well, it took me about 15 minutes to get up my driveway. And that's just to get through. So this Prius can't even handle 3 inches of snow, okay, without the anti-slip kicking in.
Right.
And, you know, once I got it up the driveway, and then I got the JD out with the blower, and I took care of everything. But, yeah, so...
I'm listening to you.
So I have decided... And I've talked this over with my wife,
mm-hmm. yep.
and it's not going to happen right now. But I told her, I said, I love my Prius, and it's great for 3/4 of the year.
Uh-huh.
I said, I really don't want to replace it with an SUV of any type, because then I lose all the benefits of driving a hybrid and I'm paying more in gas. Mm-hmm. And SUVs make lousy commuter cars for three quarters of the year. But I said, I can't go through winters like this
anymore
with the Prius.
Right.
I'm lucky I haven't gotten stuck.
Honestly, stuck or in an accident.
Yeah. So I said, the only thing I've come up with is I've got to get myself what I call a beater pickup truck.
Four-wheel drive
beater pickup truck.
Right.
With clearance. Because I used to drive an F-150.
Yep.
I used to have an F-150, and I loved my truck.
Yep.
But it's a lousy commuter car.
Yep.
Because I would commute my 100 miles a day.
Yep.
And I would fill the pickup truck, just like I did with my Prius.
Yep.
I'd fill the pickup truck once a week.
Yep.
The difference is the Prius has one 12-gallon tank.
Yep.
The Ford F-150 had two 15-gallon tanks.
Uh-huh. Yeah, yeah.
And I filled each one of those up once a week.
Yeah.
Basically about 9 gallons in the Prius versus 30 gallons of gas in the truck.
Yeah.
So, yes.
If I may interrupt you just for uno momento.
Yeah.
Newer pickup trucks as of early 2000s
mm-hmm.
got significantly better fuel economy.
Yes, and I the idea here is I do want to get a nice used pickup truck
mm-hmm.
as a third car.
Yep,
for
yep.
a weekend car.
Yep,
I still want to keep my Prius for
absolutely.
Commuting.
Yep,
and for the three quarters of the year that it's the best car to drive.
Absolutely, but you need something to take trash to the dump.
I need something to take trash to the dump. Pick stuff up like. Today, I had to, and that's another topic coming up, I had to go to the hardware store and
yep.
pick up a new mailbox and a new post and everything like that. And I'm sitting there going, I got an 8-foot 4x4, and I'm in a Prius. You know, it's surprising, though.
It fit.
It was sitting
right
on the
up
dash.
The middle,
but it fit.
But God help you if you had to slam on the brakes instead of going through the windshield.
Yes. And God help me if I had to pick up a 8-foot sheet of plywood. That ain't going to happen.
That'd be tough.
Yeah. So, and there's been many things like that that I really missed my truck.
Mm-hmm.
And so we're going to probably be looking for, a weekend winter vehicle.
Winter vehicle. Yeah. And realistically, as they say, living in the country.
Yeah.
You need to have yourself a pickup truck.
Yes, I do, sir.
Because you got the property.
Yes.
And
yes.
land and
yes.
vegetable gardens
yeah.
and all kind of stuff you got to tend to.
I got the JD tractor.
Yes, you do, sir.
I got to have myself a Ford pickup.
You got to have four pickup truck.
That's right.
Now, that being said,
I'm even going to put a shotgun rack in the back.
You're going to put yourself a gun rack in the back window?
Gun rack in the back, and I can carry my shotgun there.
There you go, sir. And I'll be honest with you, you and I were talking all this week, and I drew to the exact same conclusion. Studded snows on an Oldsmobile are great when I need to get from A to B.
Mm-hmm.
However, I am real sick and tired of being crammed into that car.
Mm-hmm.
Now, your Prius, I'm just as crammed in. Actually, I'm more crammed in. If you, I so don't fit in that car.
We went to get Chinese food.
Oh, and it was hilarious. I mean, first, we have to time. It's sort
we
of like,
both can't get in at the same time.
Absolutely not. And it's sort of like, you know, the water ballet they have, you know, when you the coordinated
yeah,
swimming?
Yeah.
First, he'll sit down, and both of us getting in this car, neither one of us can just open the door and throw the left leg in or the right leg in, and
right.
then followed by
no,
the other
No, you
leg.
Don't do that. No,
you,
no.
You turn, and you become perpendicular
yes.
to the car, and you sit down on the edge of the seat,
right.
like, almost like you're sitting on the commode.
Yeah.
You then duck your head, bending your neck and body, torso, basically folding yourself in half, to get your head in the hole
right.
where the door normally sits.
Right. Then you
from there.
Then you
left leg in,
or right leg if you're the driver.
Right leg, yep.
And then with the driver, you got to somehow not only lift the leg,
but get it under
it
the steering wheel.
Pull it in, but then cock it just at the right moment to slide it under the
steering wheel
to the other side.
Then follow it with the other leg. Now, if it's on the driver's side, it's easier than the right leg because it's on the left side of the steering wheel until you go to close the door. Because a lot of times, by default, your left leg cocks out to the left, your knee.
Has to, so it doesn't hit the steering wheel.
Exactly. So, but by the time you grab the door and you start to draw it to close the hole that we just climbed through, well, the inside of that door is not flush. It jets out with armrests and buttons. And
right.
So you have to pull your left knee towards the steering wheel to shut the door to let it relax on that door.
Right. Right, and the timing is everything, and I actually have permanent callus on my right on the left side of my left knee.
Yep, from rubbing on the door.
Right, well, having the door slam against it.
Yeah, that and on the head.
Yeah.
On the right side of my head,
yeah.
I think the skull's a little thicker. And that's for the few times you say, I'm not going to sit like I am on a chair and try and spin into the car. I want to try and get in like normal people.
Yeah.
And the minute you do, and you realize I'm tall on the torso, so you right leg goes in, you go to scoot and bring your head in, and whack right on the top of the hole where the top of the door is, and you think, oh my God! After the stars subside, because it hits you right in the temple, and you're like, holy God, that hurt!
Yeah.
And then you bring your head in, and then you slowly drag your left leg in and shut the door. You sit there for a moment and go, oh, I'm just gonna wait for the pain to go away or back off. I've done that so many times. So many times.
Yeah. And then, of course, and then once you're in and you're settled down, you're in a... Well, we've talked about this before when we did our sizes show. You're in almost a laying down position to drive.
Yes, you are. Which is uncomfortable, but it's the only way...
to get enough leg room.
It's the most comfortable of the uncomfortable positions.
Right. And if you turn your head to the left...
You're looking at the back window.
Well, you can look out the back window. I'm usually looking right at the post.
Exactly. If you lean your head back a little bit, you can see around the post.
Right.
And that's how you check the merge for traffic.
Right. Yes, you look out the back window.
At the back window.
Yeah.
Right. In the olds, whilst I drive that car, I will say, you know, it goes great with the studded snows in the snow. It rides like... Basically, really, really smooth. I mean, it kind of floats. I hate the fact that once you're in, there's no place to put your left leg. In other words, it's because your legs are so long, you can't get far enough away from the floorboard.
Oh, yeah.
So your foot is constantly pushing
against
the floorboard to the point where you're like, geez, what the hell is my leg cramping up?
Yeah, and that's why you got to move it around.
And you try and fold it. Basically, the only way you're going to get your foot not pressing against that floorboard is to fold the knee more and kick the foot to the left underneath your right leg.
Yeah. I sometimes let my left leg... Which is, you know, I don't need it for anything. I often, and thank God there's enough space it is, but often my foot is underneath the gas pedal. Or not the gas pedal.
The brake pedal. Right.
Yeah, because it's, I got to move it around.
That's what I was just getting ready to say is, but for me, in the olds, there's no place for me to straighten my left leg out.
No, you can't.
And so it starts cramping up. Yeah. There have been, I can't tell you, countless times where I've had to stop driving, get out and stand up.
Right. Yeah, I've done that.
Walk around, stretch my legs, fold myself in half again, and get back in the car.
Because there's no way you can just stretch out your legs.
My Honda was that. When I had the Honda Accord, I loved that car and I hated that car at the same time. And that was a standard.
Yep.
What I did figure out, we talked about this. I don't know if we talked about it on the podcast or not. Two-door cars.
You were saying this.
Have
more
leg room than four doors.
Yeah. Hmm.
And the seat, the rails themselves are set further back. You can take a two-door car, climb into it, and move the seat all the way back. Have your legs essentially straight. Take a model, the exact same model of that, the same car. Buy it in four-door.
Yeah.
You won't be able to.
Yeah.
It's like they compensate for leg room, if you will, for the back seat. Which told me coupes are a lot of times the way to go.
Yeah.
For legroom. And then secondly, well, ultimately, we were talking about the trucks thing, and I drew exactly to the same conclusion. I got to get another truck, and Chevy has left a very bad taste in my mouth.
Yeah, I had my Ford F-150. It was an 89 Ford F-150. I loved it. It was good to me. It was a manual, four-wheel drive, locking hubs.
Yeah.
Which was a bit of a pain in the ass, because if you're out on the road and you forget to put... Lock the hubs in, and of course it's rear wheel drive.
Right.
And if any kind of slickness of the road, it'll start fishtailing.
Yep.
So you got to pull over to lock the hubs.
Right.
And in my case, sometimes I would forget to put the weight in the back. So that made it light in the back, and it would fishtail even more.
A little bit, but yes. Tires, by the way. I was just with my boss, who has an F-150. And he has Goodyear Wrangler. What they weren't all terrains. They were Goodyear Wranglers of, I think, Avengers. Hmm. And we were talking about that same thing. How the back over the box over the bed can get light and squirrely.
Yeah.
With the right tires on there, it's not going to get squirrely on you. And he doesn't put weight in the bed of his. But I used to dislike the idea of manual lockout hubs. I want automatic hubs so I can just stop and plop it. But realistically, what had occurred to me. And I had spoken, read a couple forums and spoken to a few folks about this. If it's marginally crappy weather and you don't know if you're going to need four-wheel drive or not, lock the hubs in before you go. You can still drive in two-wheel drive. But what it does is it gives you the option when you do hit the stick, the wheels are already going to be engaged.
Right.
If you don't need it, they're still locked in.
I used to do that too. Right. But the problem is if you do that, you can't drive fast.
You can still do 65 miles an hour because you're not powering the front wheels. With the transfer case disengaged,
That's true.
Wheels are just steering.
Yeah.
But
yeah.
They're running in synchronization with one another.
So you just have the problems when you're making turns. And
realistically, if it's marginal, the likelihood is you're probably going to go at a red light, chunk, and throw it in four-wheel drive high. Then you can't do 70 miles. Well, I guess you could, but you're not supposed to
do
70 miles an hour in four-wheel drive high.
Right.
I was talking to a couple of buddies of mine, and I said, what do you do about the hubs? He goes, if I think it's going to be crappy, I'll just lock the hubs in.
I used to do that.
And he goes, actually, quite frankly, unless it's like a nice day like it was today, he goes, I leave the hubs locked in all week long. I'll just drive around with it because the wheels are tied into the axle. Mm-hmm. So everything is spinning. He goes, which is good because it keeps the lubrication going.
Yeah.
And if I need the four-wheel drive, all I do is grab the, well, in this case, in his, it was an F-350. Just grab the stick and pull it in a four-wheel drive. Newer ones, you hit the button.
Yeah, mine has stick.
I prefer the shifter on the floor because the button ones are run with an actuator. Sometimes they're electric, sometimes they're pneumatic. But either way, it's an electric switch that has to push a mechanical gear. I don't have a problem with the lever where I slide that mechanical leverage in on the transfer case because it's a stick poking through the floor.
Yeah.
I'm totally good with that.
Yeah.
Because those stupid switches go bad.
Yeah.
Those actuators, and of course, it goes bad at the worst possible time when you're sliding sideways and you're like, I'm throwing it in four-wheel low, and you press the friggin' button, and the actuator won't kick the transfer case in the four-wheel drive, and you're like, are you serious? I'm stuck.
Yeah.
I said to my beautiful bride as well, I'm getting another truck. I've never lived this long in the 13 years we've been married, 14 years together. I have never not had at least one pickup, and sometimes I had two, and a car, and then her car,
right?
So, I feel so crippled by not having a pickup truck. I thought about an SUV. I had my Tahoe for a while. And the Tahoe treated me good. I have to say, I loved that truck. But I remember why I bought my Chevy pickup truck the last time. I had the Tahoe already, and I thought, I can't put my motorcycle in the back of the Tahoe. I can't put anything. If you buy a refrigerator or whatever and you had to stand it up to move it, you can't.
Right.
Because the Tahoe is enclosed like a Suburban. With a pickup, stick it in the bed, strap it down, and go.
And I like it, at least my truck before. I got a cap for it. And I said, the nice thing about the cap is I have the option. I can put it on or take it off. I never really had to ever take it off.
Mm-hmm.
Maybe once I think I took it off.
Right.
But most of the time it was on and it was great because, at that time I had Akitas, and I just throw them in the back of the pickup truck.
Yep.
And they had more room than sitting in the back seat, you know.
Excuse me. What the hell was that?
Good old squeak. Chinese food.
Yeah.
You know, you've seen Sammy in the Prius.
Poor little guy. Poor big guy can't move around.
He loves driving it, but he takes up the back seat. Let's put it this way. In the summertime, you put the passenger back window down. And you put the driver window down, and his tail's usually sticking out the driver window, and his head's sticking out the passenger window.
Yep. By the way, I have a sidebar note. I guess we're kind of circling around.
We are. We're not even following the list. We're covering everything, but...
we're circling around to a subject we already had.
Okay.
How to disable Prius traction control.
Oh, you found it.
Step one, set the ignition switch to on. Now, yours has the push button, but right. They have an addendum to that.
Okay.
Set the switch to on, not ready.
Okay.
To do this, press the power button 2 times without pressing the brake pedal.
Okay.
So, power button twice.
Yeah.
While the transmission is still in park, fully press the gas pedal 2 times. 1, 2.
Really?
Apply the brake pedal to ensure the vehicle will not move during this step. So you have your left foot on the brake, the gas pedal 2 times to the floor. Bang, bang.
Even if you're still in park?
Even if you're still in park.
Okay.
Now put the transmission into neutral and fully press the gas pedal 2 more times. 1, 2.
Okay. Gotta get to write this down.
Step four. There's only 5 steps. Okay. Fourth step, put the transmission back into park.
Okay.
Fully press the gas pedal 2 times. The car will display (car) in the upper left-hand corner of the LCD screen.
Okay.
Fifth step, press the brake pedal and turn the ignition switch to the on position.
Okay.
Without going back to the ready position to start the engine. If these steps are followed correctly, the vehicle will start with the traction control system defeated.
Okay, that's cool. Can I ask you another question?
This is probably more than most Toyota Prius owners are willing to do each time they crank their vehicle, but it does provide a useful alternative in the event of an abnormal driving conditions. I'm on a forum right here where people are doing nothing but complaining about Prius traction control.
Well, you probably just answered my question.
Each time.
It's only good...
That trip.
For that trip. So I was going to say, how do you turn it back on?
The minute you shut the car off and put it in park, it'll reset.
Okay.
Now, the thing is it says here, many Toyota owners are complaining that the Prius traction control system is leaving them stuck in the snow.
Uh-huh.
Consumer Affairs has gone so far as to call... it dangerous.
Hmm.
The problem is that once the drive wheels of the car begin to slip, the Prius traction control system shuts power down to these wheels. This problem seems to be unique to the Toyota Prius, as most other vehicles are equipped with traction control appear to handle snowy driving conditions without blunder. The Prius traction control system is managed by a computer software and currently allows for no wheel spin at all.
Uh-huh.
Toyota states that this is the way the system is designed to operate, and that if the software allowed excessive wheel spin, there could be potential danger of a broken front axle. Axles are designed to spin in a circle. That's their job, fast or slow. If it's fast and on slippery surfaces... or slow, either way.
Yeah.
Rest of the article. Fortunately, there is a solution to this problem. Turn off the traction control. This is not as easy as pressing one button inside the car, but it's surprisingly easier than most people think. In fact, by completing the following sequences, you can do it yourself without the help of a certified mechanic.
And this was the steps you just read.
And these are the steps. These steps must be completed within 60 seconds. That's the kicker for the software.
Oh, my God.
Practice it. I mean, think about it. If you can drive without having to worry about 2 miles an hour...
Can you imagine me? Can you imagine me halfway up top of a mountain, I'm doing the... Hang on. Throw it in park.
I'm thinking...
Hit the pedal 2 times.
2 times. Button 2 times. Brake 2 times. Just 2 times. But I'll be honest with you. If I'm leaving work and it's snowing,
yeah, I would probably just
go through this sequence and do that. Drive it. Now I don't have to worry about the engine slip kicking in.
I'm going to have to make a card and put that on the...
It's worth it because it's five steps.
Yeah.
Set the ignition switch to on, not ready. To do this, press the power button two times without pressing the brake pedal. So you get in the car, and before you put your foot on the brake pedal, just hit the power button two times.
Yeah.
That's easy enough.
Yeah, I've done that before. Yeah.
All right. With the transmission still in park, fully press the gas pedal two times. You don't have to put your foot on the brake. One, two. Okay, because you're still in park. Now apply the parking brake to ensure, this is apply the parking brake to ensure the vehicle will not move during this step and put the transmission into neutral.
Right.
So what they're saying is don't touch the brake pedal. Pop it into neutral and press the gas pedal two times. One, two. So you did two times with the on button. Two times with it in the gas pedal while it was still in park. Put it in neutral and hit the gas pedal two more times.
Mm-hmm.
Now it says put the transmission back in the park. Fully press the gas pedal two more times. The car will display car. You're ready to go. So, I mean, think about it. So it's on button two times. While it's still in park, press the gas pedal two times all the way to the floor. Put it in neutral. Press the gas pedal two more times. Mm-hmm. Put it back in park. Press the gas pedal two more times. Now you're done. Huh. So eight times you've pressed the pedals.
But you got to do it within 60 seconds.
As fast as I just did it there.
Yeah, that would work.
On. Gas. Put it in neutral. Brake. Put it in park. Gas. You're done.
Okay. I'm going to have to try that.
And look for the word car in the top left-hand corner of the screen. You know it's off.
Okay. Wow. Very cool.
You know what? I think cause if I had to deal with that pregnant pause and thinking I'm going to get T-boned.
Yeah.
Cuz this thing slipped. I would scare the hell out of me.
Yeah.
If anything, and those who drive in snow, whether it be New England winters or Copper Harbor, Michigan winters or Michigan or Midwest winters, but we all know sometimes the only way to get through or get moving is to mat the friggin' gas pedal down and sorry about that. Let the tire, Chinese food, let those tires dig.
Yeah.
Yep. And you get right through and you dig your way out.
Right.
Well, you use that little technique more often than not.
I know.
To get going.
New England, that's what you do. So, in Copper Harbor, Copper Harbor's a little different. All you got to do is keep the dogs fed.
Yeah, it's true. And the line straight.
Yeah, and the line straight and the dog's fed. And you can go anywhere. So ends our version of Bottom Gear. So we finished Bottom Gear, and we still have more snow stories, though. At least I do. This happens pretty much once a season, at least. We get a goodly amount of snow, if you want to sound like Charles Dickens a little bit. We've got one of the guys that's on the highway department in Jaffrey, he lives on our road here, actually. His name's Bruce. And his favorite vehicle to plow streets with is the street grader.
Mm-hmm.
You know, one of those giant street graders with two blades underneath it.
Mm-hmm.
And but Bruce likes to plow. It does a great job clearing the snow out of the roads, especially the backcountry roads. But the only thing is Bruce likes to do 60 miles an hour when he's driving this thing and plowing snow.
Mm-hmm.
Well, I can say that he's probably got a good record of never hitting a mailbox with the plow.
Right.
However, the snow, as you call them, rooster tails, that come off of that thing, as he's driving down the road 60 miles an hour... and there's a slight curve right before my house, and it shoots the rooster curve. The snow just goes perfectly right smack into my mailbox. And at that speed, a wall of snow is going to not only concave your the side of my rural route mailbox, which is big enough to fit packages,
yep.
because that's what you do when you live in the country. often in this year again, it snapped the post. And so basically that happened at the beginning of the week. And it also broke the door on the mailbox, too.
Understandably.
And so I said, oh, well. So in the beginning of the week, I went down. I got my mailbox. The post I saw was snapped. But the plus side of this is that you've got a nice, thick, high. We had about a 3 foot to 4 foot high snowbank there.
Yeah.
And so I just took the thing and I went, stuck it into the snowbank.
Yeah.
And it was sitting there. Now that's great, but the only thing supporting the mailbox and the post was the snowbank. Well, today it was getting up near 50 degrees outside. There was a lot of melting going on. And I said, oh my God, I've got to get
the mailbox fixed,
because there may not be a snowbank to hold it up soon.
Right. Exactly.
So I went out to the local hardware store here in Jaffrey, Bell Tate's, which is, it's a French name. I always think this is funny. It's spelled B-E-L-L-E-T-E-T-E-S. Now, if you took French, that basically, roughly translated as beautiful head. Because it's Belle, which is beautiful, and Tet,
which is head.
Okay. So, and when I came up here, and of course it's French, so since it's B-E-L-L-E and then
Belle,
the Tet, it would Belle Tet. And so I was saying, I was calling them Belle Tet because there's a lot of French,
a lot of French Canadian
around here, you know. And they're saying, where? I said, Belle Tet.
Belle Tet.
And they go, ah, you mean Belle Tate's?
Belle Tate's.
So that's our local. Well, they practically own the town too, because Belle Tate's an old name here in Jaffrey. And so I went there and got a new rural route mailbox.
Yeah.
$44. And
that's an ouchie.
I got one of those posts because, well, it's frozen tundra out there right now, so I'm not digging any holes. So they make these post holders that have a
spike
at the end of it, and you can slam it into the frozen ground. And even if it wasn't winter and we had frozen tundra, there's a good chance if you're trying to do a post hole dig that you're going to run into a granite rock that's probably, 50 or 60 tons.
You mean here in the Granite State?
So got one of those. I got a 4x4, and this time I was smart. They make this arm, and I got this arm that you attach to the post, and you can attach your mailbox onto it. Now, what's different about this arm is that it has it's spring-loaded, and
it has
a hinge, and it can swing back and forth. So my theory is I put this up with my new mailbox, and when Bruce comes barreling down the road in the surface grader.
The great all.
And he has that
rooster tail
going out of it, and it hits my mailbox, it's going to go wow and swing back
or just swing out of the way and be good.
So that's my theory, and I'm sticking with it. I think it's going
to be that.
But that's the you helped me put the pointy thing in the ground.
the mounting pointy spike thing?
Yeah, into the ground, which was fun out there with a 20-pound sledge.
Yeah. Yes, and while attempting to hammer the 18-inch spike into the permafrost, it did slightly contort.
It contorted. It went kind of cockeye. And I said, oh, no, it's not perfect. Because we lined it up, and it was perfectly straight with the road. And I said, oh, no, it's slightly crooked now. But then I look down the road, and I see all these mailboxes at different angles, and front, back, sideways, and stuff. Yeah, it's not going to
matter. It's not going to matter. That's not going to. You know what? And the thing is, even though the post is now diamond-shaped, when you look at it from the street, you can still only take the piece of wood that's mounted to the bottom of the mailbox.
Yeah.
You can still make the mailbox straight with the street.
I could.
So you have a pointed this, and then the mailbox.
that would make the mailbox straight.
Honestly, that would look awesome. So you can still have the mailbox perpendicular with the street.
Yeah.
And the post is like a diamond.
And of course, we live out in the sticks here. So it's required that
Wait! I just had an idea.
Huh?
It's genius. It's friggin' genius.
Okay.
With the post like a diamond, in comparison to the front of the street, rather than a square flat surface, when the rooster tail of snow is flying up in the air, it's going to, rather than hit a flat surface on the side of the post, it's now a post. It's a V shape. The snow will break off to either side.
It's aerodynamic.
It's exact ergonomically. Snow dynamic.
Yes, it'll create its own rooster tails off the side,
and it won't have a flat surface for the kinetic energy to push the post and snap it over.
We
figured it by accident,
right? And then the fact that the arm swings back and forth
will still allow it to be straight,
right?
Ah,
yeah, this is gonna work.
And there's nothing that says when you mount that arm, even though it's on the diamond. Okay, that you couldn't take a wood chisel, and just make a flat spot for it to mount to.
That's too much trouble.
Oh, come on! You take a sawzall, go zit zit,
I'm looking because we live out in the sticks, and God forbid, you know, we can't make the postal person go up and down the street. They can only go one way on the street, so all our mailboxes are in my case,
on the opposite side.
It's across the street from my house.
Excuse me.
And they're all on one side of the street. And you just look up and down the road, and you see all sorts of crookedness.
Well, if you haven't noticed, there are some plow trucks with hash marks on the side of the door.
Uh-huh.
And let's just say, one could look at that as a unique set of scratches in the paint.
Yeah.
Or another might be able to say that could be a scoring system. I don't know. Just saying.
Mm-hmm.
It's not unheard of.
Yeah.
So, I watched a video on YouTube of the guy who got fired.
Really?
I guess it was in Massachusetts, in the city of Lowell.
Huh.
There's a YouTube video. He took a GoPro camera inside the cab of his truck, and he's commenting on the rooster tails of snow burying people's cars and laughing. Which his job is to widen the street anyway.
Mm-hmm.
If your car happens to be there, it happens to be there, and it's going to get buried in snow. But I guess he got dismissed from his position because he put the video on YouTube. And I have to admit, it was funny as shit. I'm watching this guy and his comment saying, you ain't going to find that car again, no spring. And he's going down the street. His job's to widen the street. That's what his job is.
Yeah.
There was as he's driving the big, Mack dump truck with the plow on the front.
Yeah.
There's a guy at the end of his driveway, shoveling away. And this 6.5 foot tall rooster tail of snow just comes right at the end of the driveway. You hear him laughing his ass off.
Yeah.
I thought it was funny. I've had it happen to me 100 times.
Yeah. Well, it never fails. I get done again. I've got the circular driveway in the front. And
you still crack me up with the circular driveway.
Why?
You'd never get out of it.
Oh.
You have a horseshoe driveway.
Okay, a horseshoe driveway. I always call them circular driveways.
Hey, look, kids, Big Ben. Hey, look, kids, Big Ben.
Okay. But anyway, so I've got two entrances I got to do, and I go, and it never fails. It's happened every time this. And I know it's going to happen. I go out there, I clean out the one end and the one entrance, and I usually do them first, and then I come up and I go around and I clean up the other end.
Right.
And just as sure as shit. Here comes Bruce 60 miles an hour with the grader up the road. And I just... I hit the reverse pedal on on the JD, and I back up as fast as I can, and I wave to Bruce, and he's waving and laughing.
You know, the funny thing is you sit there in your driveway on your tractor drinking a beer and just watch the rooster tails just fill up the end of the driveway again.
And then I just start over again.
Exactly. But all the rest of it's done, and that's what I always say to myself. I mean, this guy, actually, I've seen a couple of women plowing, too.
Yeah.
You know, they've got to widen the roads. If they lifted up that plow for every driveway...
They can't.
You can't.
No.
You'd never get any of the snow off the street.
Their job is to clear the road.
Widen that street out and get the snow back.
Thank God they do it so that they, you know...
Otherwise, you're not getting to work the next day.
Right. Yeah. It doesn't take me that long to clear out the bottom of the driveway. Right.
Now, you and I look at it, I think, in the right way, my humble opinion. Much easier than, say, those who, I'm going to say, haven't, can't, or won't invest in a God-blessed snowblower. So they're having to reshovel. I was in that group. I was in that crowd just along with everybody else. Then common sense kicked in.
Yes.
And I realized that the price of a snowblower... And I get all my equipment used. I don't go out and pay premium price for brand new. Is a hell of a lot cheaper than the chiropractic visits I was going to need for slipping a damn disc trying to shovel snow again.
Yep.
Is it worth it in the motor oil and the gasoline? Oh my God, yes.
Yes. Yeah.
The only thing that I would recommend to any one of the four people who listen to this podcast, in my opinion, I've had much better luck with my snowblower that has tracks on it than with round just wheels. Tracks, you don't slip. It will always bite and go forward. It will always come back. Now, mine happens to be a Honda, which I highly recommend a Honda snowblower. My Honda snowblower is 30 years old.
Wow.
86 to 96 is 10 years.
Yeah. 96 to 06 is 20. Almost 30 years
old. Almost 30 years old.
Yeah.
That friggin' thing rocks. And I expect it to last another 25 years. I have no indication.
Hondas are good. Hondas are
that good. That damn thing, and it's a little 5-horsepower one with tracks on it.
Yeah.
I throw snow and clear snow. That machine's twice the size that you buy at Home Cheapo. You know, I got the one with the big giant mouth and the really, yeah, but it's still a Johnny homeowner friggin'. You're not buying commercial grade equipment there. And mine'll just, I might have to take two passes because the chute on mine's not as big the mouth.
Right.
But it never stalls, ever. The deeper, the harder the snow, you can actually hear the engine. And it just digs in and throws it farther. Mine chucks ice when there's other ones stall. So, I mean, for the four people that listen, I recommend a Honda snowblower two-stage.
And if you do live in a snowy area, you find out very quickly, at least I have, it's good to have a backup snowblower.
I feel kind of funny because even though the Honda has no indication of letting me know it's not going to run, I still miss having my old 1977 Gilson snowblower.
Jeez.
That sumbitch could throw snow about 40 feet.
Well, I have a backup to the backup snowblower, too. So
right.
I have, of course, this year I got the JD with the snowblower. I got the attachment for the front of the tractor.
Right.
Excellent. 47 inches. I can go up and down. Actually, I could do it in two passes, but I like my driveway a little bit wider, so I'll take almost three passes. It's really 2.5 passes.
I can't believe this how fast it is compared to your walk behind.
Oh, yeah, because I do have a nice walk behind.
Yep.
And it's got the controls so you can, you know, so you can steer it, you know, basically because you can, you know, both wheels are powered.
Yep.
But you can hit the button and
it's a skid steer.
Yeah, yeah. It disables the power on one so you can spin it around stuff. And that thing, and it's got a light, and that's a Columbia.
Uh-huh.
And it used to take me with that one I would get out there, and my driveway, because it's a horseshoe driveway,
it's long.
It's about 1,000 feet,
right?
Okay, and then that's not counting. That's the driveway. That's not counting the parking area in front of the garage, and then the parking area that's on the side of the house. And it used to take me, if it was a deep snow, it would take me about 3 hours to get everything done.
Right.
The JD and the 47-inch one, I'm done in 45 minutes to an hour. So much nicer.
And you can drink a beer while you do it.
And I'm not sweating my ass off, too, which sounds funny. It could be, 35 below out there. I'm bundled up with the walk behind, and I'll be sweating inside.
Right, right.
But then, and of course, the first, and this is because, I never had a snowblower before, because I didn't live in really a place that got a lot of snow. I lived in Virginia before this.
Mm-hmm.
And so the first one I got was a used one. It was a Cub Cadet.
Yep.
Very nice. And I bought that originally because we were having people plow. I had a plowing service that used to come in. And then I used that for cleanup.
Yep.
And it was a 5-horsepower one, and it does. Yeah, it had power. It does have power. It didn't have the steering capability,
right.
And it had no light, so it was kind of crappy at night,
right.
And but I was using it for cleanup. But then I started doing the whole driveway with it because, the plow guys are nice, but all plow guys have commercial. They have commercial businesses first.
Yes.
And they do them first.
They exactly.
And then they come and do the driveways.
Right.
And there are many times where my driveway wasn't getting done.
Mm-hmm.
Or sometimes, and this was the other thing, because it was costing me $40-$45 a plow.
Right.
And the rule was if it snowed 3 inches, they'd come out and plow.
Yeah.
Well, 1 year, it pretty much snowed every other day, and it snowed every other day about
3 inches.
Three to 6 inches.
Yeah.
And, I was paying sometimes, $500 a week.
Oh, yeah. No.
Getting my driveway plowed. Yeah. I said, I got to stop this.
Yeah, exactly.
So that's when, I started plowing it myself with the Cub Cadet and did a good job. But that took me forever. And then so I got the bigger walk behind with a light.
Yep.
And that was good.
Yep.
But it was still taking me 3 hours. But then when we decided to go with the tractor, if I'm buying this tractor,
I'm going to buy one.
I'm buying one, and I'm getting the snowblower with it.
Yep. Exactly. By the way, we can add a light to your Cub Cadet.
So, I know we could. We could. Yeah. But it's the backup to the backup.
Right. It's the backup to the backup.
Yeah. And actually, I do use the walk behind because the JD is great, but I still got to cut paths back to the propane tank.
Mm-hmm.
To the oil tank and back to the where I have the generator and also.
Why don't you use the JD? Then you just got a 44-inch wide path.
Yeah, first time I tried to do it, of course the ground was a little soft.
And you didn't have the chains on the tires.
I didn't have the chains on, but I almost got it stuck in the backyard.
But you didn't have the chains on, and the ground was soft. Now it's frozen solid.
It's frozen solid. So now,
and you got chains.
But you know what? I got to keep the other one running, too. And to tell you the truth, to make the paths just for people to walk, it doesn't take me hardly any time at all to use the walk behind to go up there. And it does a better job because I can get in close, whereas with the JD and stuff, you got to kind of leave a little room, because you're busy looking over the whole tractor plus the snowblower. And, with the walk behind, that's all you're dealing with. So,
do you have the upright rods on the front of your snowblower? No, you don't, do you?
I don't have the upright. No.
You can add those yourself.
I have them.
Oh.
I haven't put them on because we haven't had snow that deep.
Oh, all right.
Yeah. You're talking about the cutters, the bank cutters.
Well, they're bank cutters, but yeah, so you have your upright rods. So
when
you're cutting your path, you got to get close to something.
Yeah.
You don't look at your snowblower because you're too busy looking down. All you do is look at where the rod is in relation to the tank.
Oh,
and that way you can bring it right up next to in a way. You know what I'm saying? Yeah. It's just, I find
it. But I still get nervous about the tractor getting stuck back there.
Makes sense.
So, and not only that, but with the walk behind.
You could pull it out with your walk behind snowblower.
Yeah, that's true. But with the walk behind, I can go up and I'll do kind of a fanning and do a larger section in front of the doors. And then I can go up into that section and I can spin the walk behind around.
Yep.
I would really have to turn
31 point turn and get the tractor turned.
Yeah, and it would be a much larger place. I'd be, you know, I might as well just snowblow the whole backyard.
I had a buddy of mine used to plow his whole backyard.
Yeah, So it's just easier to use the walk behind. Plus, then I'm using the walk behind. It's getting some use, and it's, mm-hmm. it's just not an engine sitting there. Matter of fact, I'm concerned about the backup to the backup. So I do have to run that engine.
I was going
to
say, but if they're not spinning, they're not wearing out.
They aren't, but they can seize up, too.
No, well, yeah, as long as you keep some oil in it. Every once in a while, crank it.
Yeah, you got to... You
keep the oil splashing because it has a slinger.
Yeah.
Actually, five horsepower, yeah, it's a slinger. Otherwise, if it's a little bit bigger, it would have an oil pump.
Yeah. So, anyway, so that's the... that's dealing with the snow. Now, the turkeys are coming around.
Uh-huh.
And, again, in the past, in the fall, they kind of break up into smaller groups. And usually the females kind of hang out together. You don't see that many males. I don't know where the males go.
Right.
But it's springtime now. And I will say the rafters are getting larger. And for those who may not know, a group of turkeys is known as a rafter.
Yep.
And
good eating.
The males are joining. The males are joining the rafter, and our little group is now up to about 25. And the males are beginning to strut their stuff a little bit early, I might say. But we're getting morning mummers parades, as I like to call them, because you know the males are all out there doing their mummers
right
parades thing, and pretty soon it will be time for little babies, baby turkey. Well, that won't happen until the snow's all gone, late spring. It's usually when we start seeing the little ones
right
come around. So, but yep, spring is coming because the turkey rafters are getting larger, and we heard a Peter did it. I don't know what they're called. I don't know what kind of bird they're called.
Yeah.
But around here in the spring, there's a bird. And I'll have to look it up and see what it is. But it's got a distinct call. Somebody might call it something else. But when I first got up here, and they're in New England, they're up in the trees.
Yeah.
And it sounds like they're going, Peter did it. Peter did it. It's not what it's called. But I call them Peter did it because that's what it sounds like. Every time you hear him, Peter did it. Peter did it. Of course, in a high-pitched tone, I'm not going to do it.
Come on.
Okay. Peter did it. Peter did it. So they're about. They're coming. They're coming in. Hey, you just exited.
Oh, sorry.
Oh, you lost. You left the hangout.
I did. Oh, damn it. Where'd Joel go?
I don't think anybody else is going to join us anyway,
I don't think so either.
We don't really need to hang out tonight.
Come on. Really?
So, yeah. So the turkeys are coming. So, now what are you talking about? Blue jeans always buy 100% cotton? Why, pray tell, must you always buy 100% cotton?
I learned something I'm not going to say the hard way, but just the informative way, which is, in case for any one of the four listeners that we do have, they hadn't heard past podcasts and about, especially our one about sizists.
Yeah.
Barry and I both happen to subscribe to the giant breed and of human being. And that being said, it is where a lot of folks take for granted where you can walk into a department store or a mall and buy attire, clothes,
you
pants.
You can?
I read about this.
Really?
I've done it with my kids.
You mean you could actually walk into a store and they'd actually have clothes that fit you?
And yes, if you trade them currency,
yes,
they'll give you, you can have those clothes to take home.
I don't understand this concept.
I know. It's shocking.
All clothes come from mail order.
That's what I thought, too, until, you know, kids. And so all those stores and shops that you see when you walk in a mall that seem to have very people who are really good at standing still wearing clothing.
Yeah.
You can go there and trade currency for clothes that fit.
Oh.
Mm. And apparently it's a fairly lucrative business in the United States.
Really?
Yes, indeed.
I was wondering why they had all those stores.
I know. It's. I mean, I just thought you'd go there to get, you know, an Auntie M soft pretzel, a slushy, and...
I never really bothered to go in any of those stores.
Neither do I. Not by a long shot. However, I find myself at what I call the clothing crossroads again. Mm-hmm. And this happens, depending upon what type of clothing we're talking about, it's blue jeans time.
Okay.
And so I said, okay, self, time to buy some blue jeans. I'm starting, the jeans I've had are starting to get a little bit beat up. I'm wearing them out. And so let's order some jeans.
Mm-hmm.
So you peruse the virtual blue jeans store.
Online. Yes, online.
And I said, you know what? It fits really good, and I do like these jeans a lot, this brand name, which is Levi's. Love them.
Mm-hmm.
And being of the 6'5", well, I guess with boots on 6'6", easily pushing 350 stature, 68-inch chest, 20-inch neck. I don't fit in anything. Say, let's just put it this way. Skinny jeans are out.
Right. Yeah, definitely.
Skinny shirt is out.
Right.
You know, the skin tight. Oh, look at me. I got muscle man wear. I don't need to have my shirt painted on to look big.
yeah, that's true.
So I could probably wear a toga and still come off looking like, you know, mm-hmm. Spartacus. So,
and you go to the same guy I do, right, Omar?
Oh yeah, yes. And you know he makes some quality garments. He really does.
And it comes with,
and my
comes
wife
with poles.
It comes with poles. My wife can use many of my shirts as tents. Well, they're granted they're only a one person tent,
right?
Or a shirt for me.
Yeah.
I went to order some blue jeans, and I really liked Levi's, and I had decided, you know what? I'm really digging on them. They're made in Mexico, and they're cut well. They have Levi's 560s, which are a loose cut. Mm-hmm. Now, for anybody else, probably, you know, under the age of 30, oh, my God, I'm not going to wear a loose cut. Or they're thinking you're wearing baggy and your underwear show. No.
I buy the, what do they call it, the comfort cut?
Comfort cut, yes.
The comfort cut.
Right,
loose,
which is
loose fitting?
Loose fit, right.
Which is actually, you know, tight.
For tight. And being of, and again, myself being like you, of the thick side ilk. So when I buy the loose cut, and they say, oh, it's loose cut in the, you know, in the crotch and the thigh area, it's loose for anybody else. My leg will fill that thigh hole.
Yeah.
In that pant leg. So I said, okay, cool. And I came across some Levi's 560s online. I bought them. Really good price. I think it was like $65.
Huh.
Usually that's the price of one pair.
Yeah.
And this was two pairs. And I put them on. And as soon as I got them out of the bag, I'm like, cool, I got new jeans. And I'm like, well, they don't feel. And I didn't realize this. And I had to learn about it. I started researching it. But denim comes in different grades.
Really?
Yes, it does. What? Different grades and different thicknesses.
Hmm.
Like if you have a 32, or it's not grade, it's called a weight. So you have 12-ounce, 13-ounce, 18-ounce denim, cotton, right, which is your blue jeans. Now, some of these designer jeans that can sell for $500, one of them is like a 32-ounce friggin' denim. Like, the jeans will stand on their own without a person in them. That's how thick the denim is. Yeah. And those are like the old dungarees when we were kids. You remember your mom, or dad used to say, we're going to get the kids some dungarees? And when you got them, honest to God, it felt like a burlap sack. That's how tough and friggin' rigid they were.
Yeah, you had to break them in.
And it took 6 months to break them damn things in before they were soft and pliable.
Right.
Those were those things that we used to hate as kids because you always wore the knees out.
And then they always rubbed you raw.
Yep, they rubbed you raw for the first 2 weeks of wearing the damn things. And fabric softer was then as it is now.
Right.
But they lasted longer.
Yep.
Well, those same dungarees now are considered designer.
Oh,
and they
really?
Pay $200-$400 for jeans with that same kind of denim, which I'm like, really, to have the inside of your thighs chafe? But okay, whatever, Mr. Skinny Jeans guy. I went ahead and bought these, and I couldn't figure out what the hell the weight was. I'm like, oh, these are, you know, 13 ounce denim jeans, or I think that's what it was. And I'm like, so why the hell don't they feel the same? So I grabbed another pair of my old Levi's 560, which I blew the crotch out of. That's what forced me to go buy other jeans. They were old. I finally, you know, riding my motorcycle.
Chinese food.
I read the tag on the inside, and after, you know, 2 years of having these jeans, and I realized the ones I had bought were a cotton polyester blend. Uh-huh. The ones you bought in the store are 100% cotton. Uh-huh. And I thought, well, that's why the other ones feel heavier and they feel better to wear than the blend ones. So I just thought I'd share with whoever of the four folks out there, when you're buying jeans, if you happen to find yourself in the same situation where you're buying them online, look for the words 100% cotton.
Huh.
You won't be disappointed.
Okay.
So, don't get me wrong, I'm still wearing the damn jeans now, but I just won't make that mistake again. It'll probably cost a little bit more for 100% cotton, too.
But yeah, but they last longer.
So they last a lot longer. I've already ripped holes in these in the back of the leg.
Yeah.
My beautiful bride said to me, she's, oh, what's that? You got a fray in the back of the leg of your jeans? I'm like, yeah, I already managed to start ripping these.
Now, when you buy shoes, do yours come with oars?
It depends on where. If I buy them from the large men's catalog online, no, they do not. They do come with laces typically long enough where you could tie up a tugboat.
I don't buy lace shoes, so
My boots are laces and would like belts. And I have to ask you this question.
Yeah.
We're going into our sizes thing.
Yeah.
My belt buckle keeps breaking. It flipped and did the stupid thing when we were doing the mailbox. Yeah. Funny story. I went to Wally World with my beautiful bride last weekend.
Uh-huh.
Was it last weekend? Yeah. And I said, I got to buy a belt because this friggin' belt buckle's pissing me off. And being of the large, giant breed size, there's no way in hell I'm wearing jeans without a belt. Otherwise, they're going to end up as ankle warmers. Because the first time I put my hands up, being a man of, how does my wife put it? Where most human beings have a buttocks, I have a flat surface with a split. So the buttocks is what holds jeans up on those model guys out of the GQ magazines and all.
Right.
Yeah, I don't possess one of those, so I need a belt to hold my jeans up. And I went to buy a belt. I'm walking around Wally World, and sure as God made little green apples, I'm looking in the men's, the big men section. Apparently the big men aren't that big.
Yeah.
Either that or I'm real big. And, hey, we got 48-inch long belts. 48-inch long? The waist on my pants are 46.
Uh-huh.
So that means I want a belt that can overlap a couple of inches and tuck into the belt loop.
Yeah, right.
So I need a belt that's like 54 inches.
Right. Yeah.
Good luck.
Oh, I know. Because I'm the same size pants. I have a 46-inch waist.
Yep.
And it's funny because my wife will sometimes take the belt off my pants and she'll pull it out and it's just coming like up to her nose, I think. The bottom's on the, and it's up to her nose, the belt.
Yeah, exactly.
Yes, it's very difficult to find belts.
Got to order them. And I want a real leather belt, not someone.
And here's the other thing, too. We're going into another size show.
Yeah, it's weird, but...
But the other thing I've noticed greatly is I do have a long inseam, too. I have long legs. Yes. I have a long torso, and I have long legs.
Typically 46. I'm a 46-34.
I'm a 46-37.
Okay, yeah. Well, because you're taller than I am.
Right. Well, apparently tall people are supposed to be all skinny.
Really?
There are no large proportional tall people, apparently. They're skinny as rails. Because the higher the inseam number, the lower the waist number.
So then you should have a 26-inch waist.
Yes. Yeah. I mean, if you're trying to buy pants,
6'8", 6'9", you should have a 26-inch waist.
Yes, right. But you know, if you've got a 32-inch inseam, Well, then you can have a 64-inch waist.
Oh, yeah. Or if you have a 32 or 30-inch, and I see these all the time, 30-inch inseam when you're walking around looking for blue jeans, because I'm like, damn it, I need a pair of jeans. 30-inch inseam, 64-inch waist. I'm like, no, I want a 34-inch inseam. Actually, what would work great would be a 35, but they don't make them that way. So you're like, okay, it's fine. I wear boots, so I can get away with it. And sure enough, you know, but exactly. You know, so apparently you have to be short and fat.
Right.
Really? Or tall and skinny as a rake.
Right.
But you can't be tall and proportioned.
No.
In any way, shape, or form.
No. Nobody makes clothes like that.
So we wear smocks at work. Beautiful, funny thing. We went there. They called everybody in the cafeteria. Hey, we're having this thing. We're all getting new smocks. Because you have to wear it. In our environment, static control is very important because I work with electronics. So you have to wear, and these smocks have real thin wire to ground you out. So they said, oh, the company is going across the board. We're standardizing. Oh, and then of course, they take the smock out to try it on to get an idea for size. First of all, the thing's thick as a horse blanket, which I absolutely friggin' hate.
Really?
It's very thick material.
Wow.
And the ones we have now are extremely thin material, very lightweight.
Right.
And I'm like, oh, okay, whatever. You know, it's what you got to do. It's what you got to do. Here, try this one on. And one of the nice ladies from HR hands me this thing. And I said, this isn't going to fit. And she's like, well, here, you got to try this on. I said, it's not going to fit. It's a 4XL. I said, I need a 7. And she said, well, I said, a winter coat that I wear right now is a 5XL. The T-shirts I wear are a 4XL. These things are cut small to begin with.
Uh-huh.
I said, now, first of all, I want something in a double-breasted jacket because that's what I prefer. I know it's very 90s, but I like the double-breasted jacket.
Okay, yeah, instead of, you know, the two-button and a vest.
Exactly. And so she kind of chuckled at that, and I said, but realistically, this 4XS, that's kind of a joke. Really, try it on. I said, what part of it won't snap together? I said... And she said, well, just so I put my arms in this thing. No,
yeah.
You know, my arms are 18 inches, 18 and a half inches.
Did you do an Incredible Hulk thing?
I could have shredded the thing.
You should have.
I could have shredded if I just pulled my arms together. So I couldn't get my arm to pull over to my bicep. So I'm trying to jam my arm down. It looks like sausage.
Yeah.
And
you should have done an Incredible Hulk.
And I went
thing.
To try and pull it across to snap it across the front. I said, I have a 68 inch chest cavity. So you can take measure all the way around from the pecs all the way around, just not including arms.
Yeah.
You're 68 inches. I'm more round in diameter than people are tall. And and sure enough, I said, my shoulders are 4 feet wide.
Yeah.
Now, and the funny thing is, it happened when we went to the Chinese food restaurant to pick up the food today.
Oh, that was funny. You pointed it out.
We got out of the Prius, first of all. And there was a couple.
Rolling out of the Prius on Main Street.
There's a young couple, 20-somethings couple.
Yeah, yeah.
Guy standing there and a girl coming around the corner. And folks, you need to see this. We fall out of this car.
Look, not only did we fall out, but the whole car kind of
rocks.
Yeah. We open the doors and the whole car rocks back and forth.
Violently.
And all of a sudden you see these two guys crawling out, really coming out like the Incredible Hulk, almost like shedding themselves like a butterfly comes out of the cocoon, you know.
I know for a fact I personally throw my left arm out and I try and hook onto the top of the roof of the car because it's so low to the ground.
Yeah,
any car.
Yeah, you gotta.
I kind of use the roof to pull myself up. That and the top of the door to lift yourself up because it's way down on the ground. And this young couple, came around the corner and the guy looked and you see his eyes went like saucers because you walked around the back of the car and we're walking up the sidewalk to the door of the restaurant. And you see this guy, and he's up and down it.
He's going from left to right. I missed that.
But the best part, when you walked into the Chinese food restaurant, and then the bar's off to the left-hand side, there's a couple guys sitting there, you know, a couple and a lady and another one, and you know they're having a cocktails, and then you have the dining tables off to the right.
First of all, the doors are kind of a little narrow.
They're narrow, so I turn sideways when you open the door,
and they're not very tall because I'm ducking.
And you duck to get under the doorway, and I turn sideways to fit through it. And then you walk into this restaurant, and I actually heard the guy sitting at the bar go, "Holy shit." Because we're standing beside each other at the cash register, and the cash register's at a bar, like a countertop.
Uh-huh.
The countertop was probably 5 feet long.
Yeah.
You and I standing shoulder to shoulder, you couldn't see the countertop in length. We were longer than the counter that the register was on.
And
it's the nicest little, and I'm not trying to stare, but the nicest little Asian girl standing there. And she's, like, to me, 3 foot nothing.
Yeah.
And she's, like, looking up Everest to make eye contact. And then, but then the waitress, the wait staff, every diner.
Yeah, they all kind of, there's kind of like a quietness.
It went from people talking and clink, 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 and it went silent for about 8 seconds, and all the heads looked at you and I, completely blocking the front of the store, the restaurant. And I went, and then you hear that. Then I heard the guy at the bar go, "Holy shit, the mutant showed up." And you know, and it's funny because we take for granted.
Yeah.
Okay, and it dawned on me. So that's why I stepped back by the cooler. There was a cooler with soda in it.
Yeah.
And you don't realize that when I stand in one of those glass door dispensing coolers, we all see them. When I stand in front of it, I'm wider than the cooler and taller than it. So you can't see what's in the cooler. I'm wider than the door.
Yeah. Yeah.
And you're standing at the register and, you know, paying the lady, and she's...
Well, I had to sign for it, so I got to bend down.
And you got to bend down to get to the top of the countertop.
Excuse me to the person behind me.
Yes. And she hands you what, to anybody else, and probably of normal stature, a bag with, you know, the handles on it, the paper bag with the paper handles that are twisted with all the Chinese food or dinner in it, which to anybody else, that's a big bag. Until you put your paw on the friggin' handles of it, and the bag looks like a little kid with a lunch bag. It's tiny. And you're like, "Here, I don't trust these handles. I think they're going to break." And you're holding this bag, and I'm looking at this whole scenario, how it plays out. And I realize we dwarfed everything in... We dwarfed the chairs, the booths. We had the whole booth talk.
Yeah.
These people were scared shitless. Because, I mean, they look at basically the probably two biggest people in this town.
Yeah.
Walk through the door. And, you know, we're just regular guys and ordering some Chinese. How you doing there?
Yeah.
And I'm just watching. And when everybody stopped in that restaurant, turned and looked, I went, "Yeah, I feel like a little bit of an oddity. I'm okay with that. I just wasn't ready for it this time."
I guess I've gotten used to it because, you know, I've gone to, and I remember doing this when, you know, we were high school, college age.
Yeah.
And we'd go to the movies all the time. That was a thing to do, you know.
I hate going to the movies.
Well, I mean, yeah. But you just go to the movies and you go to like the 10 o'clock showing or something like that. So, you know, that's when everybody else is there. And sometimes if it was a popular movie, you know, the whole lobby would be full.
Full.
You know,
full of people.
Full of people. And, you know, it dawned on me one time when I was standing in the middle of the lobby and I could turn around and see from one end of the lobby to the other end of the lobby. And everybody else was about 2 feet smaller than me. You know, most of the people that were close to me came up to basically...
chest.
You know, my chest.
Yep.
Yeah.
Yep.
And you know, I said... Wow, I'm in the middle of the lobby and everybody's looking at me.
And they're tiny.
I've gotten used to everybody going, "Oh."
I'm used to it myself, especially when I walk through doorways and I have to turn something because my shoulders, I could stand in the door. Many doors, when you walk square off of them, I literally, left to right shoulder, will touch the door jams.
Yeah.
And so, out of habit, I naturally give a, you know, fold one shoulder in.
And I have the problem with
ducking
the top of the door. I always duck under and going through doorways because I've got lots of bumps and bruises up at the top of my head.
Well, you're whacked.
Yeah,
it's always basements.
And
when you go down into the basement steps.
Yeah, oh, yeah. You know, oh, coming down my stairs from upstairs to downstairs. There's one side we've got a curved stairs.
And yeah.
About halfway down, I got to literally, you know,
head sideways
and duck down a couple feet. There's this one section where, you know, I'll hit the wall.
Yep.
Until I get down to the next step, and then I can duck
curve,
underneath.
Curve, bend, head sideways down the next three steps.
I duck under every doorway because, you know, I'm at that. That is, you know, 6'8 is usually what doors are.
Yes. You know what I found, and I'm used to the oddity of people staring. Plus, I have tattoos. I'm rather intimidating to look at. I'm fine with that. That's who I am. What I find so enjoyably refreshing is when you and I go out together.
I'm going to notice it more now.
Last time you and I went into Tractor Supply.
Yeah.
I swear to God, I actually see people's jaws hang open when you and I are walking. First of all, we fill the whole friggin' aisle. And you actually look, and the people that come up to help you, they look, they're like, ah, ah, ah. The mouths, yeah. Like, they forget that their jaws are like, dumbfounded.
Yeah.
And then the most comical part of it all is when they watch us go outside and try and fold ourselves in half to get to the Prius.
Because you know how it rocks when you're getting out? It does the same thing when you're getting into it.
it's comical. And I started taking notice of that. It's like the same looks I get, and I know you do too with your beautiful bride. If I'm grocery shopping with my beautiful bride.
Yeah, they're about the same size.
They're the same size. 5'1", 5'2".
Yeah.
Little things.
Yeah.
And you're walking beside, you know, your wife down, pick the aisle, doesn't cereal, I don't care.
Yeah.
And here she, you know, if sometimes I'm feeling playful, I'm acting goofy.
Oh, I do that too, so I don't have to go grocery.
Going to the store, exactly.
But yeah, that's how I get out of
she's
it.
She's like, behave. You know, and she'll sit there, stop it. Yeah. What? You know, it's, you know, yeah, I'm having fun.
I do the same thing. That way I only go grocery shopping like once every 6 months.
Yeah.
Because she forgets, and then she makes me come
makes
grocery
you go
shopping.
Into the store.
And the way I get out of it is I act like a 3-year-old.
Exactly. I'm bored.
The cart does not stop. And you just slowly go down the aisle, and she's looking at something. The cart does not stop.
You know that little bar on the back of the cart? You want to see the cart make a wheelie? I'll try and stand on the bar. Instantly, the thing flips up. You know, or if you lean forward, you can get it where it doesn't flip
right,
up. But
right.
You know, the bar bends.
I haven't tried that, but I have been on the bar.
Mm-hmm.
And have you ever seen a 6'8" guy? That's pretty hefty, over 300 pounds.
Ride the cart
down the aisle.
Yes. Know,
past the aisles and the, you know, like the main thing,
exactly.
Past the thing.
Whee!
You know what kind of looks you get?
Oh my God, that man is massively huge and he's mentally challenged. Oh, we may have a problem.
Yeah, I've been known to do that.
You know what the other thing is? Again, we somehow ended up on our sizest thing.
Yeah.
But this has happened to me, and it sucks. Remember when my truck took a dump and it blew its rear end all out of it?
Yeah.
Well, my truck was stuck in the middle of the intersection. It's too big for me to push by myself, and it was uphill. Now, I had it moving, which a lot of people found. And you're like, you pushed a half-ton pickup truck with a lift kit uphill by yourself.
I'm you popped a calf doing it.
Yeah, I tore my calf muscle doing it. But the thing that I noticed is that people who would normally, you know, say get out and help you push your vehicle, you'll help them push their vehicle out of the way, out of the intersection, just so it can be safe. They take one look at the person that's stranded, in this case it was me, and are instantly thinking, no effing way am I stopping. That dude is scary looking. Size and the whole nine yards. And that works against you. I said to my wife, it's a perfect proponent. It's a perfect sales aid why I always have AAA.
Yeah.
Because no one's going to stop to help me.
Right.
They're going to take one look. Yeah. Although, in this case, a lady stopped, which I was shocked.
Huh.
But it was, you know, in the middle of the morning. And she was a really nice lady. And a guy stopped and helped me to move. But under normal set of circumstances, no one's going to stop. They're going to take one look and think, this guy's a friggin' axe murderer.
Yeah. Yeah.
And that's being polite, or at the very least, I'm scared shitless because it's a friggin' monster.
Uh-huh.
And I just don't know. And nowadays, you don't blame them. I don't blame them because you think you just don't know.
Right.
With who you're dealing with.
Right.
And so that being the case, it's like, okay, that's why I got a cell phone and AAA, because ain't nobody going to friggin' help me if I break down on the side of the road. Yeah. You know, even the AAA guy, when they show up, they're like, oh, okay. I can't tell you. Well, like I said, the accident happened. We talked about it in, last weekend. Even I can't, having have worked with law enforcement, worked in law enforcement, but every single solitary time I come across a patrolman, for whatever reason, if I was a witness to an accident or something happened, I hearken right back to the chief here in Jaffrey when I was going to the CPA, the Citizens Police Academy, and then working with Jaffrey Police Department, which was the chief said, he goes, if I ever came across you where you're the perp in the real world, I'm not even going to bother attempting to apprehend you. I'm just going to shoot you on sight. You're too goddamn big.
That's good to know.
And I'm like, you know what? And you think about that, and I laugh. He said it jokingly. At the same time, I can kind of tell he wasn't. And I run across it with patrolmen all the time. You know, they see that look, and they're assessing who it is that they're getting ready to deal with. You don't know what you're dealing with. It's a nutcase, or they're on heroin, or PCP, right. Some crazy asshole. You don't know what you're getting ready. But when you take a quick glance and they assess it, I see it every time, and they're like, oh, fuck me. I sure hope this guy doesn't get out of hand, because I'm just going to straight out have to shoot his ass, yeah. Or, you know, tase him or whatever. And I see it a lot. But
well, you are kind of a scary guy.
I've tried.
Did you ever? I don't know whether you want to tell the story or not.
I tried timid.
Did you ever tell your McDonald's story on the podcast?
When I was going to work, no, I don't believe it. About the young man when I was in uniform and I was getting ready to go. Work with the private police force, and then from there they realized I had a uniform on,
yeah.
And I guess they had a problem with people who are work in law enforcement and soiled.
Yeah.
My food that came through the takeout window, when I realized it as I was driving down the street, I decided I was going to have a confront the individual, and, you know, this is unacceptable.
Uh-huh.
Until they took an attitude, so I snatched them through the drive-thru window. Yeah,
the food wasn't the only thing coming through the drive-thru window?
No. He and I had to have a discussion, and I wanted to have it face-to-face. And having that discussion face-to-face, it seemed prudent at the time. I now understand that it was probably not the wisest of choices, and it could have ended poorly.
Yes, yeah.
But I was quite offended.
Yeah.
And so to have a discussion face-to-face, it seemed prudent to me for us to become face-to-face, which consisted of me snatching him through the drive-thru window, out of the restaurant, horizontally through the window and into the window of my car, where he was sitting sideways where we had our discussion, and his feet were horizontal hanging into the windows of the restaurant. And then from there I decided, you know, I guess this raised a few eyebrows and it heightened the sense of awareness in the restaurant. Where I shoved them back through the hole and decided I'm going into the restaurant, because the restaurant manager decided to get a little bit mouthy. And I'm going to call the cops. I said, please do. As a matter of fact, I'm friends with most of them. And the fact that I was in a full, you know, in uniform.
Yeah.
And at the time, I actually had my ballistic vest on the outside, and carrying my sidearm and yada, 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 cuffs and this. And I said, please call him. I'm looking for, because I want to discuss this with him. The unsanitary conditions alone will get you shut down. The fact that my order was tainted.
Yes.
Should prove to be very, very interesting, to say the least. And well, they declined. They declined to call the local town police department. Instead, tried to buy me off with a coupon book and free, like, 40 free meals. But I handled that poorly. I wholeheartedly admit I'm not advocating snatching the service attendant in the window of your local fast food restaurant by the throat and pulling him into your car. Actually, it was into my truck. That probably wasn't the smartest move.
Yeah, probably not.
He could have been hurt, I'm sure. I know I scared the shit out of him, but I didn't handle that well. That was a poor choice decision, but nevertheless...
Did you notice whether his pants were wet?
I didn't take notice if they were soiled. I do know he didn't have a job after I had left.
He got fired.
That was part of the conditions of which my 40 free meals came with. Is that I wanted him reprimanded and they fired him.
Oh, that's.
But nevertheless, it was you know, it's like Joe Pesci said in what was it, Lethal Weapon? Never go through the drive-thru because they F you at the drive-thru. They know you're miles away before you realize you've just been screwed over. But I turned around.
Yeah, it's funny. I never go to drive-thrus. You know, even if I'm taking takeout, I go inside.
I will go through a drive-thru if I'm getting a coffee.
Okay. Yeah.
If I'm getting a coffee, whether it's D squared or at SB, I'll go through.
But I'll always go in, and most of the time, the main reason is because you drive up to the menu, and I'm sitting there looking at, because I don't get fast food an awful lot, right. So I don't know, I don't have them memorized.
Right. Menus. Right.
So I got to look for a while, and you know, as soon as you drive up, it's always. What?
May I help you?
Yeah, I want a Big Mac. And
I don't think you can say that because of.
I'm sorry.
You want a number something.
A big sandwich.
Yeah.
And some of those French fries.
That.
What?
What? That.
Sure. What?
Yes, if you wanted the secret sauce.
How much?
$1,050.
There's two windows in front. Which one? The which one?
The third one.
So that's why I don't go to drive-ins. Maybe it's just me, but or drive-thrus.
Right.
I just can't understand a goddamn word they're saying.
Yes, because you're supposed to. It's going to cost you $2,050 for the super sandwich with the secret sauce, a medium order of fries, and you got to go to the third window. But I've only counted two.
Yeah,
it's a hoot. Really. You think in today's modern age in the 21st century. Yeah. They'd have better PA system.
Yeah, yeah.
And some of them have, you notice, cameras. There's a little video camera on them. I noticed that at some of the coffee places I've gone to. Which I think is smart.
Yeah.
But it's definitely, it's an experience. I know I was talking to you. I was starving, friggin' hungry. Now, I personally despise going to the Golden... Upside down U's.
W's.
W, yes. The upside down W. I hate.
Yeah.
In my humble opinion, what comes out of that place can't even be classified as food.
It's all made from McGoop.
Yes. And anything.
Hamburger? McGoop?
Yeah.
French fries? Into the fold, into the mold, and you get French fries. You want that shake?
Yeah,
vanilla shake.
The kelp.
Yeah, there you go. There's your shake. Matter of fact, have you ever noticed when they're putting in a new one of those? And we'll refrain from naming them, I guess. And it says coming soon.
Yeah,
the restaurant name,
uh-huh.
And then like 2 days later, it's there and it's ready.
Yep,
McCoop.
Oh, there.
Yeah,
and there's a restaurant.
Mold. There's the restaurant. It's all McCoop.
I honest to God, it's when I saw the YouTube video of the 13-year-old cheeseburger that a guy took out of his pocket, forgot it was there. 13 years later, from that particular establishment, and aside from the ketchup, being dried on the underside of let's call it the bread-like surface, and the let's call it. Reconstituted pickle being dried up. It had no mold, no bacteria, anything. If mold won't grow on it, it's not food. Okay, any kind of food in the world that you cook, if you take it and sit it out at room temperature, in a matter of, in some instances, less than a day, mold spores or hair or furry little bacteria start to grow. That won't happen on any of these things.
It repels maggots.
Yeah, exactly. Maggots. If a maggot won't grow on it, you shouldn't be eating it because it's not food. It's chemicals.
Flies fly around it, but they never land.
You ever notice if you're having a picnic and you're having one of those type of meals, the skeeters stay away?
Yeah.
They'll bite you, but not what's in your hand.
Yeah, yeah.
And the idea, but if you're at a cookout and you're putting burgers on the grill, you can't keep the critters, you can't keep them away from you. They think you're ringing the dinner bell.
Yeah.
Well, I watched a YouTube video where this 13-year-old cheeseburger was rediscovered and a radio station offered it. It went on eBay for $2,000. They pulled it off eBay.
You're kidding me.
And a radio station in one of the radio DJ stunts offered to buy it for $5,000 and the DJ was going to have to eat it. And it was still, quote-unquote, technically edible. That's not food, people, and that's why I dislike personally. It makes me nervous. You know, if you're ingesting something like that, you know, what am I drinking, friggin' house paint? You know, it makes... It's good flavored house paint. You know, and what the hell was the other thing that was just in the news? They discovered non-edible silicone latex was in food.
You're kidding. What, to fatten it up or something?
Yes, as a filler. It was, but it's not, you know, like, for instance...
what about people that are allergic to latex?
Well, that's just it, and it's one of the... But it was non-edible latex. The other thing was, is there's some baked goods restaurants. I'm going to word it that way.
Okay.
Very, 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 very popular in the New England area are known to use edible latex in their baked goods. It's what holds... So you can shape and mold foods in the shapes that they're in. And it's edible latex. The stuff that was discovered at this particular burger establishment did not possess edible latex, but non-edible latex.
Ooh.
You remember the whole big pink slime thing?
Yes, yeah, yeah.
Right, where you figure in this burger patty, and it was loosely called a burger patty, is ammonia. You're not supposed to friggin' eat ammonia, but it's in the pink slime that's making the friggin' patty.
Really?
Yes. So,
you know, it's rich in ammonia sometimes.
What's that?
Well, certain animals' urine.
Oh, yes. Yes, yeah. I can see that. So I try and steer away, and I was starving when I was driving home, and that's when I was talking to you, and I'm like, I got to get something to eat.
And you turned down the volume. I was so upset.
Oh, you know what? I knew you were going to do it. Because I didn't think it was going to take as... I was going to get up to the microphone to place my order that soon. And I'm like, oh, wow, it's my turn. I'm like, oh, okay, Barry, hey, hold on a second. Because a little voice in my head said, hi, yeah, I'd like to have a number one... And can I have and I want a quarter pounder, and I want this, and I want an apple pie, and I want this, and then I want some this, and give me some chicken, and I love fish sandwiches, and then I was waiting for it.
I was doing that. You turned the volume.
I turned the volume down on the stereo in my car so you couldn't double place my order. Next thing you know, it's okay, that'd be $2,050 coming to the third window. Yeah, so, I went there, purchased said provisions, if I'm going to use that word loosely. And boy, did I pay for it the next day because I get such casein indigestion.
Yeah. And then there's one of our favorite burger joints, Five Guys.
Oh, yeah.
I learned real quick, you only order the small fries.
Oh, you mean you don't want the barrel full of fries? Wheelbarrow full of fries.
I can't believe what I got when I ordered a large fries once.
A 3-pound bag of French fries.
And they still put the cup in there.
Yeah, exactly.
They get a brown bag.
With a paper cup.
With a large, it looks like a large drinking cup.
Yep.
You know, I'm talking about a large drinking
cup. The 32-ouncer.
And they fill that with French fries, they dump it in, and then they fill the cup up again with French fries and stick that in.
Shove it all in the brown paper bag. And it's a great, great concept. Yeah. And it's good food, and I love the fries because you can watch them take a real potato.
Yeah, and make them.
out of the bag.
Yeah, the bags rinse of potatoes are sitting there.
Right, they rinse it off, put it in the you know, that slicer that you pull down on, shrunk, slices it into the fry shape, and then you watch them take it and put it in the fryer. Right.
Fresh fries.
Fresh fries with the skin on, and I love that. Yeah. Oh, my God, are those things good.
They are good, and I like the fact that you can make the burger exactly the way you like.
Yep.
And then they've added, and I guess it's been there for a while, the new feature, you order a soda drink, and they got the magical soda machine now.
Oh, the way you can make your own buttons. Custom flavors.
Oh, I love it, because people think I'm nuts, because Coke always, I'm a Coke fanatic.
Yeah.
I used to drink Diet Coke because I'm a diabetic, but Coke Zero is my drink.
Yeah.
But I would love, you know, and of course they have Coke Zero, Cherry Coke Zero. Mm-hmm. They have Vanilla Coke Zero. I started doing this when I was a kid, and I don't know why.
I know where you're going to go with this.
But I used to mix half Orange Crush with half Coca-Cola.
Mm-hmm.
And I loved that. I called it Orange Coke.
Yeah.
And you could, they've never bottled it. You know, if I want to make it at home, as a matter of fact, my brother-in-law, when I used to go down and visit them, he would always go out and buy Diet Orange Crush and Coke Zero so that I could mix them.
Yeah.
You know, but with this machine now,
click, click,
you can make Orange Coke. It's great.
What the hell do they call that? There's an acronym name for when you like hit every button on the soda fountain and dispense some in there. It's,
I don't know.
Oh my gosh. I just saw a program too, not too long ago, where it had, I was watching it with.
What's it taste like?
It probably tastes like shit. All those weird flavors. No, grape, orange, Dr. Pepper,
Nicola,
7-Up. You know, it probably tastes like battery acid, but
it's probably a lot
of, sweet battery acid.
It's called a Long Island iced tea.
Yeah, I love Long Island iced teas, but and the thing is, you know, then you cut it with Mountain Dew, Mellow Yellow, you know, all those other neat.
And a spritz of coffee.
Exactly, why not? But, yeah, it's definitely something that, but there's a name for it. I'll have to research it, because you know what? It'll come back to me.
I was just, I that was amazing. And you know, they have a Five Guys in Keene.
Yeah.
And we used to go to this I forget, Rick's, I think it was called Rick's Ice Cream Shop, and it used to be in another part of Keene.
Mm-hmm.
And then one time I noticed going by, Rick's was no longer there, and I said, "What happened?" Well, then I found out Rick's moved right next to Five Guys.
Really?
What an amazing thing to do, because you know, Five Guys is burgers and fries, and that's it.
Right.
Soda.
Right.
No desserts.
Right.
You can't get a milkshake. You can't get a flurry.
Right, right.
You know, or any of those kinds. Or,
slushy
know,
or whatever.
Whatever
heck.
They're called.
Right, right.
Frosty.
Frosty,
you know?
There you go.
So Rick's moved right next door to Five Guys. I said, that is a beautiful business move.
Now, I'm trying to remember it. How's it go? Location, location, location.
Yeah. But that's good. And the other thing I like about Five Guys,
mm-hmm.
Well, this is a free commercial for them, is the fact that every once in a while, we do Thai Day. We actually get Thai food.
Right, Thai Fridays.
But before that, we used to have one person we'd order out, and somebody would go out and get it and bring it back.
Mm-hmm.
And we used to, you know, take turns doing it. So
right.
The person who was doing it got to pick the restaurant. And if you pick Five Guys, it was great because you could go online. You get everybody's order.
Mm-hmm.
You go online. You can sit there on their website and make the order. Click the order and everything you wanted. And then you could pay for it online. And then all you had to do was go and pick it up.
That's pretty darn convenient.
Oh, yeah, it was great. And not only that, but you know, the one down in Nashville, the Five Guys there, that's busy at lunchtime.
I've never been. You and I went there, I think, didn't we?
Huh?
No, you and I haven't been to that one.
No, I think we went to the Keene one.
Went to the Keene one.
Yeah. But it has a line, literally. And the nice thing is, if you order online and you pay for it,
mm-hmm.
you go right to the takeout window. You know, bypass the entire line. They hand it to you. And you just walk out because you don't even need to go to the cashier.
That's cool. I've never done that. I've got to try that.
Yeah, it's great. So, but now we're talking about fast food and how we got to our sizes.
We got to our sizes through genetics.
Yeah, that's
the
true.
Extra weight that we're carrying probably was a contributing factor due to cheeseburgers
and
beer.
Yeah, I didn't do too well. I went to the doctor this week. The nurse practitioner for my diabetes, and yeah. She wasn't happy. But I told her, I said, before you give me the bad number for my A1C,
bad number.
Let me tell you something. I've been sick since Thanksgiving.
Yeah.
I have been sick truly, off truly and on. Have. I said, I told her. I said, I'll be honest. I said, this week was the first week I actually got my blood sugars down below 200 consistently.
Right.
I said I was having a hell of a time, and I wasn't eating crap food or anything. Mm-hmm. Because one thing, I was sick and I didn't feel like eating and stuff. But my A1C was really bad. But that's okay, because with our insurance company, in order for me to get some of the money, I have to go through this coaching thing, and you have to have a goal. And since
what?
Yeah. It's, yes.
What?
Yeah. We get, if you take the online survey, you get $200. And if you
for your diabetes.
No, this is for our insurance at work.
Right. But okay, never mind.
The company gives you so much money.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, they give you a pittance. Before, they used to give you the whole amount, and that's what they donated. That's
right.
And you know, when you ran out of that, then you paid your deductible.
Your deductible, right.
Actually, before that, when we had HMOs, you paid your
copay, and that was it.
But now we've got this thing. Well, a couple of years ago, they made it that you have to, first started off is you had to talk to a coach. And a coach would call you, and you discuss some goals you would like to do. And then you had to do a second call with them and look at how you were doing with your goals. And the company would give you some of that money. They used to give you full out before without anything.
Holy shit.
They'll give you the money. Well, that is now blossomed into they have the what do they call it? The metrics, biometrics mm-hmm. that you have to do, where you have to go get your blood taken, and then they check your A1C, and they check your blood pressure and stuff like that. And if you get that done, then you get like $200. You and your spouse each get mm-hmm. $200 that they dump into your account
mm-hmm.
for insurance thing, and then you get to fill out a form online. A survey, mm-hmm. and if you both do it, you get $200 each. And then if you call the coach and make an appointment, that's $200, I think. And then if you do the follow-up
mm-hmm.
and you've shown that you've progressed toward your goals that you set up during the first one, you get another couple hundred dollars. And there's one other thing I can't remember right now that you have to get done. But yes, it's all part of the let's stay healthy. And I'm like, a coach, I need to talk to a nurse who's in God knows what state in the union on a phone when I go see three different doctors every 3 months for my condition, because I'm a diabetic and that's what diabetics do, and I'm monitoring and I'm coached with them. Now you want me to go to somebody else too? And last year we just kind of refused to do it,
mm-hmm.
but you know, we're basically giving up like $1,600 when you count it all up in the end. And so this year we're sucking it up and we're doing it.
All right.
You know, but it's just a complete waste of time. And the reason I brought that up is because my A1C was really lousy because I've been sick and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And it's high. And I know it's going to just go down because I'm not sick anymore, right? It's naturally going to go down. So that's going to be one of my goals, is to lower my A1C.
So. Well, that's boy, what a...
Yeah, I'm telling you.
What a dance.
Yeah, it is a dance. And I can't even blame that on Obamacare. That's my lovely employer. And I don't think it's the insurance company either. I think it's the employer. The insurance company just manages the medical plan.
Yeah, exactly.
So I'm sure that the insurance company gave them the idea to do this.
Right.
I'm not sure what the point of it is. I don't know why.
Decide to be aggravating?
I don't know why they need that information.
It's an awful lot of information you're giving away on your own person to a complete stranger, in my humble opinion.
Right.
You know, it's like, I'm going to be reprimanded. What are your personal... That's like that team building bullshit that you get at work. Okay. I hate that crap so much. It's, come on, team, we're going to be a team, and we're going to do this together, and we're going to set our metrics for our goals, and blah, 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 blah. Here's an idea. How about just do your fucking job and let me do mine?
You know, we used to have that, and it was actually, for a while, when you first got there, it was actually a class, and you got together, and you broke up into teams, mm-hmm. and you acted, you know, it was really a team-building thing. And and you had to do it every couple of years. You had to go to this. And for the first couple times, was that. Now, I don't know when this was. I think it's back to that being that now. But for a while, the team-building course that we used to have to take became an online course where you just went and answered questions. I said, what happened to the teams?
Yeah, exactly.
Because it became that I'm complaining, because I'd much rather just sit on the computer
and lie and answer some stupid questions, and then I'm done with it. I've met my obligation.
Yeah.
I worked at a place that had so much of that that Japanese business model mentality.
Yeah.
They said, well, a more productive employee is an employee who gets up and moves about and has exercise every day. And I remember you me telling me about this when I was at that other company. And I think it was at 9 o'clock, right before break time, they used to have to get up and they used to play a video on every computer that was on there. And people would convene at certain areas and you would do these exercises. The stretch one, stretch your arm two, stretch this three, move that four. You had to do it every day at 9 o'clock. Everybody must do it. And you would stretch, and then it was only like a three minute little stint, and then you could go back to work. Actually, maybe 5 minutes. So I sat back and said, for 5 minutes, you've got 50 employees not being productive. All of which, before they go to this thing, about a minute and a half before they have to go do it, which I appropriately nicknamed ninja skills. Because you had to get up and do your ninja skills so I could go do my damn job, which I was already doing before you interrupted me.
Yeah.
So a minute and a half before you had to do ninja skills, you were already thinking about doing ninja skills. So you're slowing down your productivity because you know I'm going to have to get up, walk over to the computer where the other group meets to do ninja skills for 5 minutes, to have to walk back, which you know people are going to mingle and they're going to talk and they're going to shoot the shit.
Yep.
Or they're going to think about that other thing. You know, oh, well, here he's standing over there, so I might as well go talk to him. Then you make your way back to your wherever you were working, and you start picking up where you left off again, and you're trying to get that momentum back. So that 5 minutes worth of productivity stretching, a.k.a. ninja skills, just cost you 15 minutes of productivity per employee times 50 employees. Genius effing move. That's another HR thing. Again, I don't have a lot of love for HR.
Yeah. Oh, yeah.
You talk about a department that wastes time and money. In most instances, that's them. Huh. You know, oh, we're going to bitch and complain about everybody not doing this, and how come you don't look that, and you don't smile? How come you don't smile? Whether or not I fucking smile or not, it's my business. Huh. I'm here to do a job, not to be friendly, but to be professional, not to make friends, but to make money. Whether or not I decide to smile or not, it's my damn business.
Yeah.
And yet you hear about this, and it's all plays on the, and it's today, it's okay, tomorrow, because it's changing rules. Hmm. Okay, and you look at the clicky ones and the HRs with the, you know, the Dolce & Gabbana glasses and the friggin' $400 or $500, $600 shoes and the nails and this stuff. I'm like, and you think to yourself, what a waste of fucking space you are. How much do you drag down in a salary to sit there to try to coordinate benefits that we all know you farm out to a broker who does all the research for you?
Yeah.
And it's not just one person, it's a group of them. And you say to yourself, this is such a waste of friggin' money. And you look at it, it's great, and then everybody has to be PC. You can't say this, and you can't say that, and you can't look like this. Well, why are you looking at me? Because that's what I use, my fucking eyes to see.
Yeah.
You know, and so, well, I wasn't comfortable with how I was being approached. You mean walking? Everything is overly touchy-feely.
Oh, yeah, we have this thing, diversity.
And then we have the diversity and training. And
diversity and inclusion.
Yes, and it's, you know what, the thing
and,
is...
And going full circle, I'm starting to speak up at work about, you know, people being sizes.
Oh, absolutely. It's like, you know what, I don't feel comfortable, and I did this.
Yeah.
This place does not think about my needs as far as ergonomics for my workspace.
That's right.
And I are a person of large stature, so I need a chair of a certain size,
right,
load rating, and comfort level for me to be productive.
It's worse than that.
And it just so happens to be that the chair that I need to sit on happens to be $500, not the $75 ones.
It's worse than that. Try using a men's room.
Oh, exactly. You know what? There's a reason why I always use stall number 5. It happens to have a commode bolted to the floor.
Oh, really?
That's tall enough.
And it's not bolted to the wall? Like
actually, no, they're all bolted to the wall.
Okay.
And I do worry about
that. Worry about that.
You don't just plop when you sit down. You gently listen for the strain of the bolts against anything. God, I hope that's in studs.
Yeah, I hope the ceramic doesn't break.
Because if I snap this toilet off the wall, I'm going to be so embarrassed. Not to mention probably covered in shit.
Yeah. It's...
And I think about that when you I've heard, and you're like, oh man, this could end badly.
And then when you're done, of course, you go to the sink to wash your hands, and of course, they're all automatic power on. You know, you put your hands under the thing. Yep. Well, I don't know about you, but the sinks come up just above my knees.
Yes,
and, which puts the spout. Yeah. Where the water comes out at a location, and sometimes that water comes out fast.
And it splashes on your crotch.
Right. So then you're seen leaving the men's room with a wet crotch.
Exactly. Exactly.
I didn't do it. Exactly. It was the sink. And they're all looking at you. Sure, the sink. The sink's up in my waist. Yeah. How did you do that at the sink?
Yeah. Oh, you know, and I hate that part. If I lean against the counter, first of all, I'm in charge of the facility.
Yeah.
So I took out all the automatic faucets.
Ah,
in both the men's and ladies' rooms. And I had them all replaced with a single lever that you lift up. Now, some would say, well, why do you have that lever? That's so old-fashioned. Maybe, dare I even go so far as to say, unsanitary. Well, I had two of those faucets. Those automatic ones fail. Mm. And they turned on and stayed on.
Ooh.
And they flooded the bathroom on a Saturday where there's nobody there.
Oh, geez. Yeah.
So I got this panic call, and I'm like, you know, it happened once, and you rebuild it. You know, those stupid things are $600 for that automatic faucet.
But nobody wants to touch anything.
So I went and I tore the whole thing apart. I'm like, oh, the circuit board shorted out, blah, 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 blah. Put it back together. It was 3 months later. Another one shorted out, flooded the other bathroom. I'm like, fuck this. Pardon my French. I called my my local plumbing contractor. I said, you see all these automatic fancy damn faucets? I want everyone yanked out. And I want one with a single lever for the three basins over here. And I want one for the handicap paddles on it for those who are being in a wheelchair so they can reach them easier. On this basin over here. And he's like, really? I was like, I am done with the automatic crap. And
you want to know my little secret? You mentioned the handicap.
Mm-hmm.
I go use the handicap stall. You know why?
Why?
The seat's up high.
So do I.
And
the stall's wider.
It's much wider.
I can actually fit.
I've literally been in stalls where my shoulders are, like you are,
wall
my
to
shoulders
wall. Are wall to wall. And another thing that no one ever figures out ergonomics, and being in charge of facilities, you find yourself doing this as a facilities engineer. Where you mount that toilet tissue dispenser matters. Because if you're of tall stature in a conventional stall, and you try...
If you're trying to maneuver your arm, that's too long to try to
exactly.
reach.
Exactly. So you can't get the... Or it's mounted so low where your knees are at.
Yeah.
And that sucker's 7.5 inches wide.
Yeah.
So you're sitting sideways on the commode because the toilet paper dispenser is taking up the real estate space that I need to sit to square off on the chair.
Yeah.
And that leads to a not pleasant moment.
Okay. And here's another thing. Being tall.
Mm-hmm.
I always try to pick either an end
stall.
Stall.
Yeah.
preferably one with a wall.
Yeah, yeah.
Or the other end. I hate it when I have to use one of the ones in between ones because when I stand up to...
Your head is always above
me. I can look in at every stall. Other stall, and you want to, you know, I'm busy.
Yeah, you put
I'm averting my eyes.
You put your chin on your chest.
Yes.
And you don't look
and
up.
And you don't look up, and you're trying to put your belt on and exit the stall as fast as possible, because if you got people on either side, they're thinking, what is wrong with this guy?
There's something weird with him.
Yes.
And you know what?
And now I'm just going to be proud, and I'm going to look up, and if they say anything, you sizest.
Exactly. Honestly,
if you had taller walls, I wouldn't be doing this.
Why are you looking around? Because your walls are short, you're short, and I'm tall.
Right.
And the other thing that drives me, oh my God, I get so pissed off at this. Let's say you have to use one of the stalls.
Uh-huh.
I shoot for stall number 5 because it's the handicap stall. It's got a taller toilet in it. So long as I know there's nobody, you know, obviously, you know, it's in, I can move room to move about. Uh-huh. And, of course, you get in there, and let's say it's occupied.
Mm-hmm.
And you're like, oh, damn it. You know, this is not something. I got about 2 minutes max before I'm going to be seriously uncomfortable. So you're like, all right, well, I'll leave, go do something, walk to the cafeteria, yada, 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 and then I'll come back. Because I really, really, really need to use that particular stall for this transaction.
And I will tell you. I've gone in, and that stall is being used by somebody who doesn't need
three,
it.
Three? Oh, God, that pisses me off.
We have multiple bathrooms. I don't know how many you have in here, but we have multiple. I will go to another
bathroom
and use another freaking stall.
I'm the same exact way. Unfortunately, we have one men's room and one ladies' room.
And I do take a survey, and I know there are no people with wheelchairs in our facility.
Exactly.
So I do not feel guilty using it.
Neither do I. And the thing is, and I've walked back in there, and you find, honest to friggin' God, not to, and I'm not being grotesque, the son of a bitch that walked out of that stall,
uh-huh.
I promise you his fucking feet were dangling when he was sitting on that chair.
Yeah.
You don't need that stall. I do.
You mean the guy that walks out and doesn't have to open the door?
Exactly. You know, and it's like this little teeny tiny guy comes walking at it. Or, and you're like, really, dude? I'm sitting here cross-eyed doing the pee-pee dance because I need to use that stall. You're all a 5'2".
Mm-hmm.
And at the same time, and then you're sitting on the can playing Angry Birds, and I'm out here doing, I'm turning sideways.
Yeah.
And when you start, and I don't have another bathroom to go to, so it's like, all right, I'm going to use one of these other little stalls. One, I don't friggin' fit. Two, shoulder to shoulder is wall to wall.
Yeah.
Three, the toilet's so goddamn low to the floor, it might as well just be a hole in the floor that I'm sitting over top of. Because that's how far down you're going to sit.
Yeah.
And then you get out, you're trying to wash your hands, and you lean up against the counter. So I get to the soap dispenser. Get the soap in your hands.
You got that wrong. You have to reach down.
Well, down and across, right. And you push it
to get the foam. You almost have to bend over to get to the soap.
And you leaned across the countertop. And now you've got the wet line of demarcation right across your crotch and the top of both thighs. Because the water splashes the hell up.
Yeah.
So your crotch is wet. The top of your jeans are wet. You know, and all the meanwhile, you're sitting there going, this sucks. All I wanted to do with dignity is go to the restroom, clean up, and go back to work. And instead, I had, you know, I'm dancing out in the hallway waiting for some guy who's playing Angry Birds on the shitter, who's 4 foot tall, sitting on a toilet while his feet dangle. And and there's no reason, there's no need for this.
Yeah. And we left out the last thing we haven't talked about in the men's room. And,
you mean the urinal that's on the floor?
Well, I have a hard enough time aiming in a normal sized urinal
because it's way down there already.
It's already short. But then there's those times you've got two guys that are like 5'2", 5'4", and the only urinal left
is the kiddie one.
It's the kiddie one. Which I don't understand why they have them in the work facility, but they've got the kiddie one. And I'm like, Yeah. There's a couple times it's, I gotta go.
Yeah.
You know, and the stalls were filled because you can't go in there.
You can't
and
go
use
in the stall,
stall,
right?
So, you know, I'm trying my hardest not to pee on the wall.
I know. It's like this thing. It's like, all right, what are you doing? It's, and you're sitting there going, if I aim much lower,
yeah,
it's gonna, I'm gonna be pissing on my boots.
Yeah, yeah, my pants are gonna get.
Honest to God, it's it cracks you up. It's, and everybody avoids the kiddie urinal.
Yeah,
anyway,
yeah, everybody does.
And you say to yourself, well, okay, so let me get this straight from an architectural engineering perspective and to building code. You're telling me you have to take a urinal of normal size and bolt it to the wall where it's only 2.5 feet up off the floor. That's to building code. So then shouldn't you have one that's 5 feet off the floor?
Yes.
For us taller individuals?
Yes.
And then two normal ones in the middle.
And I hear about other groups complaining that they're discriminated against.
Mm-hmm.
We go through this every day, and people laugh when we complain.
Mm-hmm. Exactly.
And I will tell people, look, I may be able to lose weight, but I can't lose height.
Yeah. You nailed it. You nailed it. You know, and quite honestly, you know, and then that just brings us into the sizes thing. I mean, how many, I know for a fact I've taken out 4 chairs at work in the last 2 years.
Well, I got to say that I finally went to the nurse and they bought me a very expensive chair. And I have not broken it. It really does fit me, and it's
that's really nice. That's mine. However,
it's very nice. And when I'm in my office, it's so comfortable and nice to sit at it. The 10 minutes that I'm in my office a day, the rest
my
of the
boss
time,
is cool.
I'm in meetings.
Yeah.
Where I got to sit in the crappy little chairs, and I'm known as the chair breaker.
Yeah.
Because, you know, you sit in the normal ones, and then they've got the adjustable backs, right, that you can adjust back, you know, and, you know, there's a knob, and then you can adjust it back and tighten the knob.
Mm-hmm.
Well, it just so happens that the center of gravity, I guess you would say, of my back is much higher than the average person.
Than what the chair is designed for.
Right. And so I'll sit in one of those things, and I'll just lean back a little bit, and that back just goes all the way back. And so, you know, I'm at meetings where I'm, and it doesn't matter. It can be as tight as you can get it.
Yeah, crank it tight.
And I sit there, and the back just goes, yeah. So at most meetings, it looks like I'm laying down.
Yeah.
You know? And
can't you sit up straight? No, not in this chair.
No,
or you have to lock it so it won't pivot back at all.
No, you can't lock these.
Oh, mine have a lock.
These are just tightened ones. You can't lock it. They all go back, and as soon as I sit down and lean back, the thing goes into almost lay down position. You know, and I can't, you know, I can't use it. If I want to do it, I have to kind of sit like a newsreader.
Yeah, exactly. It was barely any weight
even touch it. And then, of course, that's difficult to do because in most places, most meeting rooms,
your legs don't fit under the table.
They don't fit under the table. And first of all, the chair's too low because I have mine adjusted so that my change doesn't fall out of my pockets.
I actually adjusted the height of my desk.
Oh, well, I have a tall desk, too.
Well, ours are on brackets.
Yeah,
I took the whole desk apart.
We actually have computer ones, so we can raise them.
You can raise. Okay, yeah. Mine are on brackets that are in like the slots.
I actually have a standing desk that I use as a normal desk.
I took the brackets, the countertops, all the shit off because I built them.
Yeah.
Along with colleagues, good friends of mine at work.
Mm-hmm.
And I got so sick and tired after we talked about it because we just rearranged all the cubicles.
Yeah.
That when I went to move mine, I'm like, you know what? I'm so sick and tired of having to fold my legs like I'm doing right now.
You can see mine. Mine are crossed
right now.
And every meeting I go to, I go in there, I sit on the chair that's too small, all the change falls out of my pocket. Because if I sit there with my legs, you know, with my feet flat in front of me, my
your knees are taller than your waist.
Right. And then you try to go under the table, and the first thing you do, I have scars on my knees from trying to
whack the table.
Whacking the table. And so the first thing you do is you cross your legs. lowering them so you can keep your change and get your legs under the table.
Mm-hmm.
And then your body kind of gets used to that position. And you go to the doctor and they want to take your blood pressure and they say, uncross your legs. I said, I can't. Why not? And I said, I'll lose all my change.
That's too funny. I actually took my, when we moved our cubicles, I took all, I mean, I got a lot of shit in my cubicle. Yeah. And I took everything off the countertops. I unbolted the countertops, got to the brackets, raised the brackets so I could get underneath the table and sit belly to the table with my legs square to the floor.
Yeah.
Took my chair, which the company was really good. My old boss bought for. I asked, I said, "Look, boss, I need a chair that I can friggin'. I'm taking out the chairs left and right."
Yeah.
Got me one for the 400-pound rating. I've since killed that one. I got it. I found another one, and I blew the gas cylinder on it. You know how you can.
Oh yeah, yeah, yeah.
To the top right. Yeah. Well, I get in it, and it's spongy, and as I'm sitting here, I can feel it go.
Yes, it goes down
down to the floor, and I got the shits of it collapsing to the floor. And I'm like, great, it feels like I'm sitting on a conventional toilet. It's so close to the floor. So I flipped my chair down sideways, took an awl, struck a mark, drilled a hole through the gas cylinder to the rod.
Oh, really?
And put a passed a nut and bolt through it, so it would only drop to the, and so it sits on the nut and bolt,
jeez.
And it won't go down any further. I'm so sick and tired of, all the way to the floor. I first tried it with vice grips, but the teeth stripped the shaft. It slid, and I'm like, this sucks. I'm like, drill it out with a nut and bolt until I buy another chair.
They don't understand.
Nope.
They really don't get understand.
They don't.
And everybody laughs because when I go out into Dilbertville, which is where I call the cube thing, I have an office, but I go out to where the other programmers are, and then they all crack up because I'll go up there to their cube, and I'll just lean on the top.
Same here. Yeah.
My hand and my arms up on the top of their their walls, and they just crack up, You know, they can't see around the room, and they say, you know, and I can look everywhere around the room. I can see.
There's no obstruction whatsoever.
Yeah. Seeing everybody's cubes.
Yep.
Yeah, again, it's kind of like the stalls. Mm-hmm. You can see in everybody's cubes.
Every time we have a production meeting, which is 9 o'clock in the morning, and we stand around the scheduling board on what's going to run on what line. You know, I realized, I realized it this week, I can see every single solitary hairstyle of everybody who's here, because I can see the tops of everybody's head. Yeah. And that's including the people that are standing 30 feet away.
Mm.
It's just one, and you know it, but you just like re-notice it.
Mm.
And you go, shit, this sucks. Yeah. You know, sometimes, not that part particularly, but it's just all the other little things.
Yeah.
And you start to gain a perspective on people are looking up.
Well, and the fact that we can sit here and talk about this, again, this is our second podcast because it's you and I again, and we always tend to get on this subject. We think about it a lot.
A lot.
Because we got to deal with it every freaking day.
Every freaking day.
And when you try to mention this to people, they laugh at you like, oh, I wish I was as tall as you. And I'm like, no, you don't. You don't believe me.
Right.
You know, you want to pay twice as much for your clothes. You know, you want to, you can't find a car you fit in.
Mm-hmm. Ever.
You used to be able to get an expensive car.
Yeah, and the seat would go back.
And you fit in them. But that's not the case anymore. Mm-hmm. They're all the same. And you know, and just all the other things we have to deal with on a daily basis. And it's like, that's why I'm serious. I'm kind of half joking because I don't believe in this.
Right.
You know, the whole
thing about the size and the weight.
I don't believe, you know, and all these groups have to be
special.
Yes.
You have to cater the world for our
diversity
special
and integration. Right. It's like, and why can't we just all learn to get along? Yeah. And let's not, hey, look, we're pointing out that you're different.
Yes. You're fat.
You're different. And I'm going to be extra friendly to you because you're different.
And you're short, so we're going to be extra different. And we won't use the word short or imply anything that has any height. Well, everything has height.
Yeah.
But you won't because they might get offended.
Right.
Right. And then for the extreme, I don't know, pick a group, the extreme ugly ones. You don't ever mention beauty around them. Huh. And for the ones who are follically challenged, you don't ever mention the newest, latest hairstyle because the follically challenged person might get uncomfortable.
Oh, I don't want to talk about going to get a haircut in front of Joel.
Exactly. Because I might be sensitive and I'll start to feel bad because I can't grow hair at the top of my head, so I shave my head.
Yeah,
it all comes down to,
and we've said this before when we were doing radio QRM and everything else, it's like, people, we all got problems.
Suck it up.
We're all different in one way or another.
Exactly.
Okay? Grow a thicker skin.
Yes. Everybody gets a trophy.
Yeah. Just grow a thicker skin. I sit there being ex-military, and, you know, there's other ex-military at the place, and they all love the Army guys, the Marines, the Navy guys. They all love to gang up on the Air Force guys, you know?
Really?
But, yes.
Oh, jeez.
Yeah, because they think they're hot shit, and, you know, all this. But
the Air Force guys think they're hot shit?
No.
Just busting your chops.
But, you know, my biggest thing is well, first of all, I don't let it bother me. And yes, I'm still here, but nobody else is. That is the Google Hangout asking me whether I'm still here or not. But I play along with it. Mm-hmm. Matter of fact, I tell better jokes than they do about the Air Force. Because it's, you know, just grow a thicker skin.
Exactly.
Yeah. You know what? You know, you talk about going out and having the bivouac, and they're out in the middle of the field, and it's freezing cold, and then, the Air Force guys didn't have to do that, and I'd listen, I said, no, we never did that, and then all this, and that, oh, the Air Force guys never had, no, we don't have to do it, no, and it's like, and then when they're all done, and they're laughing and they're ridiculing me, I said, now, you guys just went through all the awful, terrible things you had to do in your military branch. And mm-hmm. I said, I didn't have to do that.
Right.
Who was the stupid one?
Exactly. Exactly. Which one of us was the brighter of the two? You're out freezing your ass off. I'm in an office. I'm in an office looking at a screen.
Right. Yeah.
And it's honestly it makes you laugh. It really does. It's yeah. But you can't tell folks nowadays, you know, get a thicker skin. You really can't. Mm-hmm. It's so touchy feely. Everybody has to be special. It's. Yeah. And it's a damn shame. It's one of the biggest reasons why I think younger generations, you know, you see it by example. I'm not making this shit up. I mean, you know, I got Occupy Boston. I'm going to go stand in front of friggin' town hall in Boston, and they're going to picket. I want a $100,000 a year job, and I got my degree in liberal arts. You got a degree in nothing.
Yeah. Yeah.
That's in a practical world, you have a degree that's completely friggin' useless.
Yeah.
Towards virtually anything.
Right.
At the same time, too, you're 60 grand in the hole because you went to college for 4 years drinking beer.
Mm-hmm.
Can't figure out why you're in debt. And then you expect to come out, walk into a job making 150 grand a year. And can't figure out why the best job you can find is at a fast food joint.
Mm-hmm.
Well, you got a degree that's useless. You got a bunch of debt. You got a shitty work attitude. And you don't know anything. You know, and so we're going to pick it because you should give it to me. Well, you know what? Shut up. Suck it up. Go out there and dig ditches and work construction and do all the other shit that the rest of us did. And then start to make your way in the world.
Hmm.
You can't tell them that now because everybody gets a trophy.
Right, right.
Everybody's a winner. Everyone's a winner. No, you're a loser. And I'm one of those people. I'll tell you, you're a loser.
Now, the whole diversity thing just cracks me up because all you're doing is pointing out how people are different.
Mm-hmm.
You know? Oh, look, they're different from me. And it's like, yeah, you know, why don't you find the things where we're the same
mm-hmm.
so we can, you know, get along because, you know, and learn how to work with each other.
Right,
you
right.
know? If you didn't point out that you're different, it may not have mattered.
Exactly. Yeah.
You know, but you're pointing it out, and I'm like, I didn't think about that. You are different from me,
wow.
And I'm sorry. It's human nature.
Well, if everybody
it's pattern matching, you know, you find
If we were all the same, how boring would life be?
Well, but you tend to group with people
of similar
similar patterns.
Yes, yes, indeed.
Okay, yep. So it's hard to break that mold.
And I don't want to break that
mold.
You
point out that they're different.
It's a liberal thing.
I don't like the terms like African American or Irish American or
that's bullshit. Italian You're American.
You're an American. Yeah.
And period.
And I know you've got some blood in you, but you know, people tell
me. So do you too, because you're breathing.
No, that's true. But people ask me now, you know, if they want something like that.
Where are you? I'm American.
Well, what are you? I said I'm Native American, and they go, what?
Yeah.
I said, yeah, I was born here.
Exactly.
Yeah. My relatives came from Germany, and they came from England and Scotland. But I was born here in this country. I'm a Native American.
I hate those who play the race card to try and get ahead. Well, my ancestors are this, so I should get this grant, or I should go ahead and get that. Here's an idea. Why don't you take the test, just like everybody else, score higher than the other guy, and then you're entitled to get hired for the job, or a girl.
Yeah.
Don't play the, I'm entitled because you're not entitled to jack shit.
Yeah.
Earn your keep. That's what I say. Yeah. And the other thing is, you know, people say, well, what's your ancestry? Where are you from? Philadelphia.
Well, that's the other thing they say. Yeah, when you say that, and then people go, well, you can't call yourself that. What about the true Native Americans? I said, what, the Asian people that walked across the Bering Strait down through Alaska and Canada and came into this country? Oh, you mean the Asian people?
Exactly.
They're not really Native American either.
Right. They're actually, I think, what was it, geneticists?
And who knows who they kicked out.
Yeah, exactly. Honest to God, it's
in the process of coming into North America.
Right. And I, you listen.
Because guess what? We didn't have recorded history back then.
Nope.
I mean, and by the way, a lot of those Native Americans, they fought with each other left and
constantly.
Right.
Constantly. Constantly. And what was it? I just read somewhere that said they had proven that the Norsemen, Vikings, were here something like 200 years before this continent was recognized and discovered by the Spanish.
Oh, yeah.
Well, originally they said it was only like 100 years, and they realized it was like some huge span of time even sooner.
Yeah.
They were crossing the seas and trading with the local natives.
Yeah, they were going
natives.
Through Greenland and Iceland.
And you say to yourself, well, okay, cool. Well, that makes sense. I mean, somebody out there had to make it, and they figured out how to do it. But others take credit. What it basically boils down to is what you read in history, and this brings me to another subject that scares me. History only remembers those who was the first one to put ink to paper.
Right.
Not the one who was the first one who actually did it.
Right.
And it's always going to have that person's interpretation on it, too.
And history's written by the victors.
Right. And the other, what's led me to, my kids were talking about something, and I had mentioned to them about, what the hell was it we were talking about? Oh, the race riots back in the 60s. Down in Charleston, South Carolina, yada, yada, yada. And they weren't taught about that. And then we were talking about Republicans and Democrats and politics and how you're taught about that in civics class.
Right.
And my daughter had informed me, I was talking about the different political parties and the viewpoints. This is during the Vietnam War. Mm-hmm. And then you had Korea prior to Vietnam. And I said, but we were talking specifically about Vietnam because we all had family members that were part of or in Vietnam. And they said, they don't teach us about Vietnam. I said, what are you talking about? Well, that was just like, as it was explained, it was a skirmish.
Really?
I said, a skirmish? I said, how many American souls were lost and Allied souls were lost over a skirmish? They said, well, they don't talk about that. I said, so let's go a little bit further back. Let's talk about World War II. I said, and the concentration camps. And I said, and as far as, let's see how politically everything played out. Who was supporting who? The domination, global domination at that point. The Japanese bombing Pearl Harbor. Well, you don't talk about how Japanese would, they don't teach how they talk about and bomb Pearl Harbor because it implies that the Japanese were going ahead and they were bad people and they were trying. I said, that's history.
Whether you consider them good or bad,
they bombed
Pearl Harbor.
Exactly. The leadership in that time decided this is what we're going to do.
Right.
This is what our end goal was, and this is how we were going to attempt to achieve it.
And the reasons they did it.
And the reasons that they did it.
That's history.
It doesn't make it good, bad, or either. It makes it history.
Yeah.
And that's who the players were.
Right.
Well, they don't teach it because you might not be sensitive to folks of a Japanese background. And I'm like, they should be just as interested in it as we are.
Then we're doomed to repeat it.
Exactly. I'm like, so I looked at her and I said, are you telling me they don't teach you this stuff? They haven't taught you. And I started rattling off different subjects, things that you and I take for granted we learn. She said, nope, we've never talked about this. We've never talked about that. We never talked about Vietnam. We never talked about Pearl Harbor. We never talked about the concentration camps in Auschwitz. We never talked about... I said, are you... What the fuck? These are things that you... Fundamental markers in the history of mankind in this country that have got to be remembered so, again, you don't repeat them. And two, so you can keep an eye out for the next fucking dictator asshole who's going to try and pull it off. You can spot it before it comes around the bend and smoke that son of a bitch.
Yeah.
And they won't teach kids this stuff nowadays. She tells me 90% of the kids she talks to in all the schools, she says, you know, all the friends that I have in school, of them, 90% of them are all part of, if you will, the Republican conservative political viewpoint, and 90% of the school is not.
That's a good mix.
And that's teachers. Oh, what was it? I know what it was. My daughter was listening to music in her headphones, and she was standing in the hallway, so this wasn't in class. And a headmaster had walked by. I sure hope I don't get her in trouble for this. But a headmaster was walking by. Kids were in school, and it was talking about the song's lyrics involved politics and mentioned Obama in a not glamorous light. You know, the great savior. The headmaster then said, you have to go to the office. Took my daughter to the office and said, you're going to be suspended for having that music coming out. And I could hear it through those speakers. She said, why? It's not during class and it's accepted in the rule book. So I can have whatever music of whatever lyrics that I want come through there. The headmaster, and I quote, it's throwing negative political viewpoint. She says, it's a political viewpoint that by the First Amendment, I'm entitled to have.
Good for her.
And you can't override that. Are you going to override my First Amendment rights? That I can't have a right to a political viewpoint that differs from yours? So you're going to try to suspend me because my political viewpoints differ from yours with regards to whoever is in the White House currently? The headmaster went apeshit. Now, her housemaster was right there.
Mm-hmm.
And he said, the guy lost his mind to the point where he couldn't speak and walked out of the office. Her housemaster turned to her and said, you can't say that. She says, the First Amendment says I can.
Good for her.
But ever since then, she said, this asshole has been gunning for me nonstop. Yeah. She says, and my daughter is part of the junior AFROTC program in her high school and has done very well and earned her way quite high in ranking. Subsequently, she says, and it's funny, when the kids get older, because she's not a kid anymore, young lady, she says, Dad, it's the funniest thing. She says, I got to make sure I have my shit in order all the time, because this guy is constantly gunning for me.
Yep.
He hates any of the ROTC quote-unquote brats, the pro-militaries, and they're always gunning for us. And that's modern-day schools.
Yep.
My wife had mentioned to me something about there was a group that was back in the 50s, leaders of multiple countries had gotten together on like a neutral territory and had decided that the populace of their countries was too well educated and therefore could form too much of an opinion to overthrow or have opinions against the ruling government. So a directive was made. I'm trying to remember what the hell that directive was called. Basically, to change the educational system to dumb down the future population. Dumb down the future population, turn them into sheeple, make them compliant.
Right. And make them dependent on the government.
And make them dependent on the government. And this started back in the 50s.
Mm-hmm.
And it was a whole league of countries that have decided to go ahead and do this. And subsequently, I tell you what, it's worked friggin' in spades.
It's getting scary out there.
You got more sheeple, more dependency. Don't question.
And the other thing, too, with the First Amendment rights, it's not that they throw you in jail. It's that they try to shame you into your point of view. That your
into
point of view,
their point of view, right? Yeah. And that yours was wrong and I'm right.
And you're not allowed to speak at all.
Yeah. Well,
you can't have a different opinion. And if you do, it's stupid. It's dumb. Yeah. Nobody believes that. Mm-hmm. You're a moron.
And well, you know, and it's funny. We kind of went on a political spin now.
Yeah.
Realistically, and I know it's running long, but. In a nutshell, they're all entitled to the touchy-feely, everybody gets your trophy, until the first bad guy really does show up, and the shit truly, truly, truly hits the fan on our own backyard, and the first one's hiding behind all the rest of the people who will speak up and who will fight.
Yeah.
History is bound to repeat itself.
Yep. Yep. Because whether you like it or not, maybe man is getting better as they get maybe wiser. I say this, man is still an animal, and deep down, you know, deep down, when the shit hits the fan, you act more like an animal because it's self-preservation.
Exactly.
You're going to take care of yourself first, your family second, and, you know, then it moves
extended
up to
family,
extended
friend.
Family and friends, and you don't give a shit about the government, and you don't give a shit about anybody else, because if you can't take care of yourself, if you can't make yourself happy, warm, and the fuzzy feeling...
Yeah.
You don't have time for anything else.
Exactly. I got to be healthy. I have to be functional as a machine, a tool.
Right.
Then I can provide for my family and care for them, those who can't, my family and my immediate extended family and friends.
And then if that's all warm and fuzzy, then I can worry about the
then
next
I'll worry
level.
About you and the other thing and does so-and-so get along and blah, 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 blah.
Right.
But until those first three things are met, I don't fucking care.
Yeah. And I'm sorry, but that's honesty.
Mm-hmm.
And for people go, oh, you have to care about everybody. No.
Nope.
I don't. I got to take care of myself first, my family second, my extended group next.
Yep.
And then maybe I'll start caring.
Right. And when all they're squared away, then if there's any left over, I'll worry about you.
And I'm sorry, that's just human nature. That is human nature. It's not just human nature. It's animal nature.
It's animal nature. Exactly. It's
Darwinians. It's survival of the fittest.
Only the strong survive, and all the rest get eaten.
Right. Maybe we should end it on that point.
That's a good ending point.
Yeah, we didn't even get into tech talk this week. Who gives a shit? Because
we'll
only had two things, and they weren't that great anyway. So with that, musical guest is insert band name here, because I haven't picked one yet.
Alrighty.
So we'll get something. I'll find something before I put the show out. I haven't even put out the last show because of all the snow blowing and everything that was going on this week.
You gotta pace yourself.
128 will be out probably tomorrow. I don't think there's going to be a show next week unless you guys want to do one. I'm going to be out of state on a little mini vacation. I'm going to be busy on Saturday night, so I'm not going to be able to even join you remotely.
Right. I'll see about setting up to do some recording. Maybe I can get the Mac Mini all set up for that.
Okay, you and Michael and maybe
Barty
will be there. But, so 1:30 maybe next week. It may be the week after. But thanks for listening, and for all the military members out there, both CONUS and OCONUS, thanks for what you do.
Absolutely.
Thanks for being the guards at the post, and for you guys, especially OCONUS, we hope you get home to your family and friends real soon.
Definitely.
And until then, we'll keep the home fires burning for you. So, with that, from the southwest corner of New Hampshire, I am Barry J.
And also from the southwest corner of New Hampshire, this is Joel.
And we'll see you next week. Here's Phil and Band Name Here.
Tonight's musical guest is Monk Turner with Awesome Man. We'll be right back.
Samson, speak. Good boy.